I'd like to welcome everybody this evening to our a special board meeting tonight. This is our third board meeting of this board. And I'd like to make a quick announcement before we get started. Tonight we have had five items on our agenda. We are going to pull item three and table it for a later time, probably next week, October 20th. We're not prepared for item three tonight. So we'll be doing items one, two, four, and five. We're going to have director and staff comments. Then we're going to have agenda and scheduling, and we're going to try to set up some more of the meetings so you have some warning about the meetings coming up. And then we're going to have closed session. After that, you're welcome to make public comment before closed session, and then we'll go into closed session and come out and report after that. And we hope to be done no later than 11 o'clock tonight at the latest. Okay. We're trying to do more meetings of shorter length so everyone's still awake when we're talking. So we're ready to get started. Is there any announcements from any members of the board before we start? Anybody want to say anything? How about staff? Any announcements before we get started? Okay, we're going to start on item one. This is a carryover from last week, and it has to do with the Slo County Integrated Regional Water Management Plan. And Mr. Milanis will introduce the topic, and we have some speakers tonight.
Good evening, Madam President, members of the board, staff, and members of the public. Item one on your agenda this evening is the endorsement of the San Luis Obispo County Integrated Regional Water Management Plan. Now, this plan's a State Water Resources Control Board and the Department of Water Resources administrating a program, Proposition 50, for integrated regional water management, and it's a grant program. The grant will provide up to $50 million for qualifying proposals that are designed to increase water supply reliability, foster regional water management, reduce pollution, and enhance and restore the environment. As a guideline for applying for the $50 million, it requires the lead agency, the County of San Luis Obispo, prepare and adopt a regional water management plan. Over the last year, the district has participated in conjunction with the Water Resource Advisory Committee in giving input to this document. This evening, we have Paavo Ogren, the Deputy Director of Public Works for the county, here to do a presentation on the program. Before I bring Paavo up, it is staff's recommendation the board consider and adopt
these. It's our Water Resources Advisory Committee itself that we bring. That's our county's advisory committee that we bring all the detailed recommendations to, work through the committee, and have we had a number of task force meetings. And in December, we'll be bringing it to the Board of Supervisors for adoption. But in any case, as a collaborative effort of the staff of many agencies, I want to, you know, first and foremost thank George and Margaret and your staff for helping on the input, and recognize a number of cities did as well. The Integrated Regional Water Management Plan is really a new approach to water management planning that the state of California, both the Department of Water Resources and the State Water Resources Control Board, are asking local agencies throughout the state to pursue. I was recently in Sacramento talking with one of the deputy directors of the Department of Water Resources, and he pretty much expressed it as the state is just simply too big for DWR to understand all the details that are going on. And their approach is just to have the local agencies develop regional plans in order to explain to the state what's going on in our regions, what are our priorities, what are our visions for the future. And it's a cornerstone requirement in order to pursue any of the Prop 50 grant funds. We really see it as two different benefits. One is trying to pursue the grant funding, and the second is trying to bring the communities in the region together on a coordinated effort. In any case, the first slide that I really have is just really quickly what the California Water Plan vision is, because part of our plan itself, which the draft plan is a sizable document, as many of them are, and at the end I'll show the website if anybody wants to, you know, review the details. But we needed to really show consistency with the state's vision. And in their water plan vision, they touch on preserving, enhancing public and health, standard of living, business vitality, agriculture, industry, and the state's environment. So we then needed to develop our local vision. And the very first is just enhancing regional cooperation and promoting sustainable water resource management. That's very consistent with the state's vision. And then also balancing economic, environmental, and cultural values and property rights, also consistent. But the third thing that we put in there that the state really didn't have in their vision, but we thought it was important, is recognizing the role of regulatory agencies and the autonomy of individual jurisdictions. And that's a little bit of feedback that we're giving to the state in our plan, because there was a lot of the state saying, hey, the regional approaches is the must-go approach. And yet locally, we recognize that some issues can be resolved very well on a regional basis, but other issues are still resolved best by local autonomous agencies. And, of course, relationships with regulatory agencies are important to try to develop local solutions. A little bit about Proposition 50 itself. It was approved in 2002 and provides $3.4 billion for a number of different purposes. Included in that is this integrated regional water management effort. And overall, there's about $500 million that the state is making available through grants and other programs on integrated regional planning. I guess the best way of summarizing integrated planning is sort of the evolution. Traditionally, water resource planning, decades past, was building dams and building pipelines, and then it got into in the more specifics of the County Flood Control and Water Conservation District. It's Act 7205 of the Water Code, and so all of the county officials and board members operate ex officio as the district's board and officials. So it's a little bit invisible, but it still is a separate legal entity with different powers. The plan development itself, we believe that we were very optimistic in getting to it because we thought it was consistent with the historical efforts of our region. San Luis region itself has been very much focused on environmental aspects. The debates associated with state water in the early 1990s really illustrate that the deliberations going on locally are consistent with what the state is looking at now. One of the primary objectives in the state is reliability associated with the state water project, and one of the best debate issues in the early 1990s in our region, we really question how reliable is the state water project. So we were very optimistic embarking on it because we believe that our region itself has been following sort of the vision of that the state is now espousing, but that we've been following it for quite some time. We also decided that we needed to utilize staff resources, kind of the practical side. Our budget was extremely limited. The property tax shifts over the last couple of years took about $1.5 out of about $2 million out of the flood control district's property tax revenues, so we were very constrained financially. But we also wanted to do it with staff because that, we believed, would foster communications between staff of different agencies, and those things that we learned during the process then would be retained by staff. Obviously, sometimes, you know, local agencies do need to bring in consultants to work on a variety of issues, and sometimes they're from far away. But we believe that on this particular issue, it's very important to do it with staff and have a lot of the agency staff communications and to basically promote that institutional knowledge. When we got started out at the beginning of the year, we wondered whether it would replace the countywide water master plan, but we've pretty much come to the conclusion that no, it won't. This is more of an umbrella document that identifies what all the different agencies within our region are trying to do right now in terms of goals and objectives. So as an umbrella document, it's not just focused on traditional water resource planning, but many of the things, including things that the Morro Bay National Estuary Program is working on, the different environmental agencies and organizations, the CSDs, the cities, and, of course, the county and flood control district. And, again, as I mentioned before, we really saw it as a good opportunity for some fiscal assistance. Overall, there's a planning grant that was submitted in May, and we've requested the maximum, which is $500,000. We've received the tentative responses that we were tied for 16th in the state out of about 45 applicants, which means if the final determinations are consistent with those preliminary determinations, then we will, in fact, be awarded the grant maximum of $500,000. We could be learning as early as tomorrow, but should certainly learn by the end of the month. the applications itself on that planning grant are sort of the precursor steps to our next update of the countywide master water plan. We want to look at groundwater banking, primarily in the Paso Robles Basin. That's the largest groundwater basin in our county. It has potential for both banking of state water supplies to improve those reliability factors, as well as the Nacimiento project. Regional permitting plan is really what can we do in the future to make environmental permitting as efficient as possible. It's an important aspect of addressing projects. We've done a number of watershed permits where a lot of those are historical. They're pre-existing deficiencies, some of the hardest things to try to figure out how to solve. And so we want to try to develop a plan that says what are the proper and what are the ingredients that are needed in order to make for successful flood protection projects. Within our region, the biggest and most significant one is the levee system down in the Rio Grande area. It breached in 2001, I think. I'm not exactly sure the year. What are the proper, what are the ingredients that are necessary in order to solve some of those problems? That's the planning grant side. Again, that was submitted in May, and we're optimistic on getting funding there. On the implementation grant process, there's a $50 million maximum, which we have applied for, and that was submitted in July. We're in the step one, which is the conceptual proposals associated with the different projects that are included in the grant request. Step two will not begin until sometime next year. At the earliest, we're going to find out from the state whether or not we sort of pass the muster on step one. If we do, then they'll allow us to participate in step two. And I know that there's going to be a significant weeding out process. There's about $148 million statewide that's available in this particular point in time. There'll be a couple hundred more million dollars that's available in about 2 years. But out of the $148 million that's available in this current round, there's about $1.4 billion of requests on a statewide basis. So the state can only fund approximately 10% of all the requests. So we know that there's going to be quite a bit of weeding out at the step one level. In order to be able to compete for all those dollars, we do need to have this in front of the Board of Supervisors by December 6th. There's not a formal public comment requirement associated with the plan, but at all of the meetings that we've been doing in order to seek endorsement of the plan, we've made sure to recognize that it's on our website and we will be taking public comments through around November 15th. Anybody is invited. Again, it's not a formal type of a public comment period associated with a lot of plans, but still, we're getting comments in. And overall, the responses we've been getting have been pretty positive. But again, just want to make sure everybody knows that feel free to comment on it. The implementation grant itself, there's four high-priority projects that were deemed through the Water Resource Advisory Committee and basically through the agencies. All seven cities have representatives on the Water Resource Advisory Committee. Your CSD has representatives, a number of the CSDs. It's represented by agricultural interests, environmental organizations. The board members themselves have their individual appointees as well. But this is really, a collaborative effort where the four projects that were deemed to be most noteworthy are your wastewater project, the Nacimiento Water Project, the Lopez Water Treatment Plant Upgrade, and the Nipomo Supplemental Water Project. For the Los Osos Wastewater Project itself, I'll have a little bit of a sort of an official position to make sure to read off so that nobody has a misunderstanding of what the county's official position is. And we covered that at the Water Resource Advisory Committee again last Wednesday because there's a lot of, well, what's going on type of questions. And I'll cover that in a second. But out of the four, the way that those dollar amounts were determined for the regional request was looking at elements first and then the cost of the project second. And so number of water elements included would be to say that the Nacimiento project got points because of its regional significance, from Paso Robles to Templeton to Atascadero to San Luis Obispo. Those are the four agencies that are currently participating in the project, and it has unallocated or unsubscribed water for other future users. So the Nacimiento project had significant regional benefits associated with it. And then the Los Osos Wastewater Project scored more points because of the multiple objectives associated with the project, even though the Los Osos Wastewater Project itself is primarily focused on one community or a community and the bay and the relationships to the bay. But still, the groundwater recharge aspects of it and just the overall objectives. associated with the project is where it scored high points. Those points then were then multiplied by the then estimated cost of the project in order to come up with a weighted average, which was then used to apply to the $50 million. The result was, again, that the region supports about $19.8 million for the Los Osos wastewater project. There's also another aspect of the plan, which is, again, part of the motivation for us doing this, and that's that the state said, what are you going to do in the future? What's the five-year plan? And in the document itself, again, it identifies goals and objectives associated with most all the agencies associated with water resources in our region. And the question is, over the five-year period, how effective are we in meeting those goals and objectives? And so over the five-year period, we're going to be working with local agencies to look at the goals and objectives, and are we really meeting them? And one of the things that we're very cognizant of is that as the county or the county flood control district, we do not want to be critical about individual agencies or the staff of individual agencies. So the evaluation is more of, if something's not getting done over the five-year period, then is there something that from a regional perspective, you know, we can propose and help to get it done? Because, again, the idea is if individual agencies are accomplishing their goals and objectives, you know, through their own autonomy, then, you know, why fix it if it's not broken, type of a thing. But those things that tend to be more challenging than are the regional approaches to help meet those goals and objectives. And the evaluation itself would be things like institutional effectiveness. Again, our project, our drainage flood control project down in the South County, the county's taking the position that we don't know if we as the county are the best type of institution to solve that particular problem, and we're working with the constituents at looking at maybe forming our local agencies. But is it regulatory practices? Is it fiscal issues? Is it community acceptance? And obviously, you know, those four types of topics of review are very much what your CSD is associated with on the wastewater project itself. I'm just about ready to wrap up here. Anybody who wants to review the plan, it's at www.slocountywater.org. And before I conclude then, I just want to reflect, you know, a little bit about recognizing the challenges that your district is facing, because right after your election a couple weeks ago, you know, I sort of got the email blitzkrieg, I guess, if you would, from what's going on and how's it going to affect, how is what Los Osos is doing going to affect the regional application. So I put together a position, and Mr. Edge, who's our CEO, has read it and likes it as well. First and foremost, step one does not address any design-related elements. As a result, we will be informing the new board of the current status of our efforts, that there is a step number two in the application process if the state deems step number one submittal to be sufficiently worthy, kind of pointed that out, and that we want them, the new CSD board, to understand that actions they may take could influence our regional application. Since the regional application does not, however, specify the specific design elements of their project, which are, as the best we can tell, the details of community deliberations, we do not see immediate conflicts in our efforts, but that, yes, we would like them to review the grant application and let us know if anything is inconsistent with your intended direction. It may very well be true that step number two does take a different course than previously anticipated, but again, we do not want to act in anticipation of the new CSD board and not without informing them of our current efforts and providing them with an opportunity to review and comment on same. So I guess the thing is, we really would like to seek your endorsement. The regional group has been very supportive of, you know, we haven't gotten into, again, specific design elements, but understanding the various objectives that are being pursued in the community. And I think that, you know, we just have to sort of take it step one at a time right now and keep the application in. Obviously, we've got a lot of fiscal challenges here, and it's hard to make an opinion on what's the probability of getting into the grant money, but, you know, certainly we would like to continue to try on your behalf. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Ogren. Are there any questions from the board at this time? Director Fouché, Vice President.
Thank you, Pablo, for the presentation. That was great. I really appreciate that. My first question is on the major ranking criteria.
Yes.
Can we go back over that and get me on the panel? So maybe we can skew those numbers a little bit towards us.
necessary. Just want to go.
There we go.
Just kidding, but of course. But I was, I know we didn't have any input on that on the panel, but I don't think we did. Did we have any input on that?
Yes. In fact, we two things. Is one is that the development of the ranking criteria itself, we had some specific workshops where everybody was invited to. So we went through the details at the workshops, and then once those details were worked out, then we brought them to the Water Resource Advisory Committee for like a formal action. But everybody sort of worked on them.
My next question is, what is there anything that we can do to help?
You know, you guys have been a tremendous help already. Your staff has certainly. I think the best thing to do is the state just recently published the Step 2 grant application information, what would have to be submitted if we're allowed to, again, proceed into Step 2. And I think it's a matter of everybody's staff. I haven't looked at them yet. They've just recently come out. But everybody needs to get into there and say, okay, what are we going to have to put together for Step number 2 in order to be as competitive as process? We've been getting a lot of positive feedback, so I do anticipate a positive meeting with the board and getting the plan adopted by the end of the year. At this time, I think we need to start looking forward to Step number 2. And
okay. Any other questions from the board? Director Tacker?
Sure. Me first? Okay. Thank you for your presentation. I'm sorry I haven't read your Big Bet book, but I want to. And the slide that John mentioned, the major ranking criteria, does your book go into detail of how that came about?
That is, the details are in that are in the actual grant submittal itself.
Okay.
And I think that is as well on the website, and I can double check that when I'm in the office. Each criteria up there has a number of questions. Overall, the ranking criteria was based on consistency with the state model. They said, look, local agencies, you can kind of develop your own ranking criteria, but we knew that if we were as consistent as possible, then we'd score more points in the competition side of it. But in any case, I'll double-check in the morning if it is on the website. If not, I'll make sure that the grant application information gets onto the website.
Okay. I'm just curious how we were designated a disadvantaged community.
Pretty good. There are not, under the strict interpretations of the state, there aren't any communities that were deemed to be disadvantaged. But we went into the census blocks, and we were able to find census tracts, if you will, that indicate disadvantaged. So we put a map together that says even though none of the communities in and of themselves qualify, there are different communities that have more disadvantaged tracts with them. And so that was where we used the state guidelines and got a little bit more detail-oriented to be able to express that indeed, we do have some disadvantaged populations, even though.
I would agree with that for Los Osos, and I'd be very curious to see what you have. Is that in the book?
You know, I think that I'm pretty sure that it is one of the exhibits in the plan itself.
Yeah, that's something I'd like to see. And forgive me, I don't know who has been representing the Los Osos Community Services District at the Water Resource Advisory Council.
I think George.
Just George?
Yeah,
no.
And Margaret was at there, and your vice president was at the last meeting as well.
At the last meeting, yeah. Okay, thank you.
Certainly.
Director Cecinia?
Thank you for that presentation. I got a chance to look the plan over today, and it looks pretty thorough, pretty complete. But I had one question about the previous water master plan, I think you called it, for the county. And
yeah,
if you could go into a little bit more detail about the differences between the two and the different purposes that they're prepared.
Okay. The master water plan itself is more of the detailed analysis that the county puts together. What are the water supply demands? What are our supplies? What are the types of projects that can meet those demands off into the future? The 1972 plan itself was really the one that encompasses what we're doing right now. It was updated in the 1980s, and it was updated again in the 1990s. But it was still a plan that said, okay, the demand is expected in the various that are necessary to maintain habitat for steelhead and other endangered species. But it was that 1998 plan that started to move a little bit away from the traditional and into the integrated stuff. But in any case, the master water plan itself is really more of the detailed analysis associated with supply, demand, population, and those kind of projections, versus this plan itself is more of an umbrella document that identifies what all the different local agencies, what their goals and objectives are. The idea is that over time, when we do our next update to the master water plan, hopefully we're going to develop more consistency on that basis. But whereas the integrated regional water management plan is more of an umbrella, or whereas the county master plan is more of a technical analysis, the integrated plan is more of the document that says, what are the goals and objectives? What does that mean to the different agencies, and how are different agencies, again, whether it's Morro Bay National Estuary Program, Los Osos CSD, or the City of Paso Robles, what are their goals and objectives? And that way, they're all in one document. If staff at either the State Board or DWR want to look at what, you know, the different agencies are doing in our region, they can go to one document. And then it's a method of evaluating over time, are we being successful in those goals and objectives? So I think it's a little, the distinction is best of technical evaluation and recommendations versus the collaborative and goals setting and community objectives type of approach.
Well, I noticed this plan talked about things like flood control and groundwater recharge, things that maybe weren't in the previous plans, because you were talking about supply side pretty much.
That's correct.
And, okay. And that's, and actually, there's even, I guess, more on supply side here, because you're talking about groundwater recharge and conservation, yes, which are supply side issues now.
Yes.
Director Sennett, do you have any questions at this time?
Yes, thank you for that report. It was very enlightening. I'd like to know, would the application under Phase 1 make us less competitive for any projects that we might have proposed for Phase 2?
Let's see. Would the applications for Phase 1 make us, less competitive in Phase 2?
Yeah.
You mean based on changes that might be happening?
Well, as I understand it, there's two phases for the grants.
Oh, okay. I was confusing step one versus step two.
Yeah.
I don't think so. I think that what we're hearing from state staff is that they're just going to be completely independent. You know, if you do well or poorly on today in phase one, they're going to evaluate that separately on phase two. I think that they're anticipating that some of the regions that really didn't get up to speed on what the state's intent was on phase one will maybe get through that learning curve and be more competitive in phase two. So we do anticipate more competition in phase two, but that's more of other regions getting up to speed. I guess, general commentary on phase one versus phase two, whereas phase one has like the projects that are sort of here and now. I think that phase two, they're water and they're wastewater projects right now. And as a result, their projects themselves might, you know, the strategies on implementing them might come to the surface more in phase two, and we might see in the phase two ranking criteria more of the ecosystem projects.
Okay.
That's a guess, you know.
Another question I had, would elements of our current project be eligible, even though they're funded right now, in order to possibly have the grant money defer the or substitute in the or reimburse the community for its future costs under the loan? In other words, could the funds under the grant take the place of the existing financing that we've taken out?
I'm not altogether familiar with all of your existing financing. In terms of whether it would replace some of that existing financing, I'm not sure, but in terms of augmenting it, certainly. And, you know, the grant money would simply if that means that you'd have to borrow $19.8 million less, then certainly that would be true. There's some of the state programs that say you have to borrow all of the, you have to use all of your loan money before you can use any of the grant money. That doesn't, that string's not attached to this one. That type of string is common in like the FHA money, some of the federal money, and also some of the, if the SRF program had provided a grant component, like we did one in San Miguel many, many years ago, we had to use all the loan money before we could use any of the grant money. Again, that's not a string attached to this program.
Okay. I had one other question. How secure is the funding for this in light of the, you know, changing world of financing and obligations? How secure is this money?
I think that that question points to how well is the state really going to be able to sell the bonds to come up with the cash to be able to. And they had to defer it. You know, with the state budget crisis, especially when it came to its head, it hasn't gone away, but when it came to a head a year and a half ago, the state put on hold its Proposition 50 efforts because there was a water bond coalition that had been previously working on this in like 2003. So they put that on hold until they felt confident that they'd be able to sell the bonds and proceed with the grant program. So, you know, taking the message from them, it's that they think they can move ahead now. And of course, the state's overall budget continues, I think, to concern all the local agencies. So we shall see.
Okay. And I had just one curiosity regarding the statement of the Paso Robles water basin being a very major one. And yet they're importing the Nacimiento water, apparently. Is there something that they're correcting in that basin that's occurring that maybe Los Osos might share?
As we know, that with groundwater basins, there's a number of different constituents who develop rights to that. With property owners in the agricultural community in the North County using the vast preponderance of the water. Currently, the basin's not in overdraft, although there are specific areas where there is more stress on it. And so the implementation of the Nacimiento project itself will help to meet the municipal supplies greater than what the demand is. If we put it into the groundwater basin through a bona fide program, then in subsequent years we can pull it out. That could help with other local agencies in meeting emergency types of needs. But in terms of a real sort of solid supplemental water supply, you still have to fall back on the traditional contracts, whether it's Nacimiento or state water, desal. So we're hoping to also be able to incorporate like emergency provisions into basin programs and stuff, but it's more of a reliability of those two projects, Nacimiento and state water.
I think we'd be interested in seeing what kind of forum you use to bring the different water purveyors and you know, the water holdings together, because we're doing much the same thing, but more in apparently adversarial way.
Oh. Yeah. So those particular concepts themselves, the forum is the Water Resource Advisory Committee, and we will be making a presentation in November on some of the basic concepts associated with groundwater banking. The concept, it is a brand new concept. That's why we're asking the state for that planning grant application, is really so that we can start funding real feasibility analysis, because we're at a conceptual stage right now. Is it feasible? We don't know. But at the November RAC meeting, we'll be going through a lot more of the details of the concepts there.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Ogren.
What Sassini? Day in November was that? Yeah. Do you have a date?
First Wednesday.
I was also going to ask, could you announce the dates of the meetings where the public could participate at the county level? So the RAC is one on the first Wednesday at what time and where? And
it's at 1:30. Mm-hmm. The best thing to do is to verify on our website, slocountywater.org, because that meeting location can change. It's often in the library. It was at the Ag Commissioner's office last. And then December 6th is the slated date for the Board of Supervisors.
Okay. I'm going to open it up to public comment now, and if you could just hang out in case people have questions. And could you line up on both sides if you'd like to speak on this issue? And either questions or comments about the interregional water management plan. It's a grant application. We're in step. The county is the lead agency, and our projects are included in there, and there's hearings coming up. Mr. Barrow.
My name is Al Barrow, and I did appreciate the presentation. It's interesting. It was held over from last week, so we knew it was coming. It's always nice to hear something besides gloom and doom. The sky is falling. Life is going on. There's money in the state. What's really nice, in my view, about this particular integrated regional water management plan is it seems very much in line with the goals of the technical task force, a sustainable, environmentally protective alternative, whatever that might be. And I believe that there's one passage that jumped off the page at me. Let's see if I can find it here. So this is really good news that we do have some opportunities, and I'll wrap it up here quickly. Protect the community from drought. If we have our basin full of water from recharge, one of the goals in this is stated is recharge. Instead of having a disposal project where the water goes up the upper aquifer and into the bay, it'll be going into the lower aquifer and increasing our water supply, and we'll avoid dependence on imported water. If you read page 4, those are the goals in this, and we're very much in line with them if we continue on with an alternative project. Reduce conflicts, achieve other multiple benefits and objectives. We talked about flooding. We do have an ongoing drainage problem in Los Osos we've never addressed, and with an integrated plan, we'll be able to address all those issues at once. So I think this is a good start, and the only thing I'd like to ask Paavo is, who was it that designed this? What engineering firm put this together?
Actually, there was no engineering firm. We have an environmental resource division within the Public Works Department that the board approved a couple years ago. They took the lead on getting it organized. We're significant contributing authors. Frank Honeycutt, who was actually, he's at the city of Arroyo Grande speaking on the same topic tonight. He would have been out here on last Thursday, but he also had a significant amount of authorship in the document.
Thank you. For the public's sake, there is a handout on the table that is the table of contents and summarizes the report, the grant, the application so far. So if you'd like to get a copy, Mr. Bearden.
Don Bearden, Prohibition Zone, Los Osos. I disagree with Al Barrow. The 29 points that we achieved with the present project. If we switch projects, we need to review the stuff. You have to look at the I went on the website this afternoon and was browsing, and you have to look, there's a whole lot of times where the wastewater project is mentioned in that brochure. And we need to go through all those mentionings to make sure we're doing what we say we're doing. It says about meeting goals and objectives. By putting the project on a dead stop right now, we are not meeting goals and objectives. We need to be considering that. It has elements in here on environmental justice and disadvantaged communities on Section H that we probably ought to be following so that we're doing the same thing as the state is doing and everybody else is doing when we're trying to survey the neighborhoods and do that kind of stuff. Okay. Anyway, and in the back of the whole thing, there's that worksheet where they use to figure out some of the points. And that's not in your handout. It's in the website. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. McPherson.
I just wanted to start out with just reading the committee. And so I think this is a really nice model for us to follow. It's changed from the 70s, as it was pointed out, from just purely looking at water that was needed for the municipal uses and water supply to a more holistic watershed approach. And that watershed approach is the right way to go. It's always been the right way to go. And even though people fuss about whether the fish are getting too much of the water, or the we wonder about how we're going to sustain Sweet Springs and our trees when we change the pattern of our water, in our groundwater. And so I encourage, I know that when we went through the goals of our own project, we found that they fell short. Many pieces were incomplete. They weren't, you know, we didn't do all of the parts that were first presented in our original project. And that's one of the reasons why when we look at something like agricultural exchange and the requirement to do that, yet it's not in this current project. Some of the piping that was supposed to be out to move water around and recharge it in different areas is incomplete. It's not there, and we'll pay for it later. That we are looking at ways to make it more effective when it comes to water management. And I think it's really important for us to know what we have and don't have in our current project, to participate closely in this, to endorse this approach and this project, and bring the whole community along to know that the project that's being proposed out of town does not change what we have in this project, but it adds to it and actually meets the complete goals. Thank you.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to speak this evening on this topic? I'm going to close public comment. Oh, pardon me. Mr. Margeson?
Richard Margeson. Could that last slide that was up there be put back on, be turned back on? Thank you. I have a couple questions dealing with the program. The Los Osos project is the one listed in here, wastewater project. Could another project have been part of this request? And what I'm talking about is an extensive water conservation project. Could that have been part of this application, with the wastewater project being part of phase two? Because I'm looking at that list as far as fiscal impact, readiness to proceed. It doesn't take a whole lot to get a water conservation program going. Regional benefit, if we don't have to import water, that leaves more water for the other communities in the district. We are a disadvantaged community. I'd like to see the analysis on that. I'll leave it at that at this point, but could we get an answer to that and how that might work out? One other question. Am I correct that we're that the county is applying for $50 million out of...
The state public agencies are expected to implement water conservation programs. And so there's already this you know, expectation that we should be doing that. Now, on the other hand, if... It really, a lot of the conservation programs that exist throughout the state are things like having multi-tiered water rate structures. And there's a lot of softer conservation types of programs, if you will. If there's conservation programs that's really, truly associated with having to do pipes or something, I don't know, moving water from the municipal area to ag, or if there's something that's unique, then it might be able to be more competitive. But in terms of, you know, throughout the state, we already know that conservation is a very important component. And the idea, the second point is that what they're really looking for is projects that have multiple benefits. And so if it's only purely a water conservation program and it doesn't have multiple benefits, I'm not sure how well that would rank. But in any case, you know, if there's something that's out there, then certainly it should be evaluated.
Okay. Ms. Director Tacker? Mr. Margeson, do you have a follow-up question? Really quick, come up quick, if you could, please. You didn't use all your minutes.
Sorry.
I think we could make the argument that it does have multiple benefits. Saltwater intrusion by itself, with the water consumption that we have as a community, the multiple benefits are financial to the community, looking at the extensive cost of whatever project we end up with, not having to import water, stemming saltwater intrusion without having to go to some elaborate measure other than the project and water conservation down the road if a future study shows that it's coming in faster than projected. I think the case could be made that there's multiple benefits to a water conservation program at this point, especially with the limited dollars. The reason I asked the question about the $1.4 billion and what percentage is going to be available is we're not going to get $19.8 million even if this gets approved. So,
okay, quickly, you did use your 3 minutes, so let's try.
This is water reuse, the purple pipe system. This is something we've talked about a long time. It's one of the state's major goals. 2 years ago when they had the white paper with the Department of Water Resources, the State Water Board, and Department of Health Services, water reuse should be increased as a goal by 25% by the state. An alternative project could do that with a purple pipe system. That's another benefit.
Thank you, Mr. Dugan. Okay, I'm wrapping up public comment. If you want to speak, come up to the front. Otherwise, I'm wrapping it up.
David Dugan, Los Osos. No, we're going to be approving.
All we're doing tonight is endorsing the concept of them applying for this plan and including us in that by resolution.
And I'll through
there's further time for public comment at other meetings.
Okay. So what I'm reading in there is that what I heard said was the wastewater treatment system really doesn't apply to getting this grant, correct? Is that what I heard? But right through the whole
county are interested in this contract with Los Osos is that you've made with us.
Hang on just a second. Is this a comment about this interregional plan at this stage? Oh, there may be another time when you can speak about this at a later time, but this is just about the interregional plan.
I might not get to come again because I'm standing in the what I think is the prohibition zone. So that's why I voted, because I don't really know anything about this major ranking criteria. But I know that this last 70 days has been a major wreaking problem in the construction of where I'm living and the people that I've lived for 6 or 7 years as a postal patron here. It's becoming a bit of a health and a safety administration problem.
Thank you. Okay, I'm going to close public comment. On this item, do I have any other questions or comments from the board? I just have one myself, and that I totally think the vision statement is beautiful for this this application, and it ties right into what this board is trying to do as well. We're totally believing, and we want to endorse the concept of sustainability, and that is why we're so concerned about changing the project to include some of these elements. And we're very committed to working with the county on those kind of things. Do I have a motion, please? Yes.
Before I make the motion, I just want to thank Pablo, and I think we're on the same page. That was a great presentation, and we're really looking forward to working with you in the future. Thank you very much. I move to adopt the resolution to for the Slope County Integrated Regional Water Management Plan, and to endorse that.
Do I have a second?
I second that.
Okay. Mrs. Vega.
Director Sennett.
Yes.
Director Cicena.
Yes.
Director Tacker.
Yes.
Vice President Fouché.
Yes.
President Schicker.
Yes. Thank you, everybody. And thank you, Mr. Oberyn.
Thank you.
Yes, appreciate you coming. The next, Mr. Lloyd would like to make a quick comment about the taping of the meeting tonight.
Good evening. Good evening, Council. Good evening, staff and audience. We have been receiving several calls that the audio has not been clear in the meetings and the replay, and we want to let everybody in the community know that we are doing everything we can to make sure these meetings are clear and as crystal clear as they can be within the issues of audio and video aspects. If there is any questions, you can reach us at our office at 772-2715. The other comment I'd like to make tonight, this is the hearing-assisted listening device for the meeting here in this room. I've been handing them out for the past 15, 16 meetings, and I had four and now only have two. So if anyone in the community that happened to pick one of these up and don't know where they've got it, they got it here. They also, this is a standard radio frequency, so if you want to bring your own headset, Bob Lloyd, I will answer them directly. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. The next item is to accept the spring nitrate groundwater sampling results. And it may seem a little late to accept the spring results, but since we haven't done it yet, I thought it would be a good opportunity to describe the results a little bit. And I've asked Mr. Miller to give a short presentation on the results and what the nitrate sampling and groundwater sampling is all about. And at the same time, could I get the overhead up to show one slide that we prepared?
And test it. Oh, there I am. Thank you very much. We'll take just a second to allow Dan to get the overhead going there. And while they're doing that, maybe I'll talk a little bit about the reason that we do this and really what the nitrate monitoring program is. Basically, once every 6 months or so, there are approximately 25 to 27 wells throughout the community. That's a lot of wells that are sampled and taken to a lab and then tested for various dissolved components, minerals. One of those dissolved substances is nitrates. And nitrates are a big issue in Los Osos for various reasons, and I'll talk about that in a second. Some of you who have followed our groundwater situation may know that under the ground there are several different zones where we can take water out of the ground. And the results that you see up on the screen and the results that are reported in this program are all from shallow groundwater supplies. This does not say anything about the deeper zones in the ground, the zones where we get most of our drinking water. So these are not drinking water results. These are the results for shallow groundwater in the community. Again, they test for various components. The main reason that we do this is really prior to the wastewater project, we need to establish a clear starting point for where our water quality is in the ground. It's a baseline or a starting point that we're establishing, and we'll be doing this throughout the years and look at the trends as the wastewater project is implemented, and that'll help us to assess the quality of our shallow groundwater. Nitrates are one component of particular interest, and I'm sure those of you who have followed the wastewater project would have heard about this, but they are often used as a measure of human activity or human contamination associated with septic system discharges. So it's one of those chemicals that the Regional Water Quality Control Board is very focused on, and therefore that's the one chemical that we're producing a map for and showing that on the screen. There's also a handout on the table over there, two-sided, that has this in a table and a copy of the map, if there are any left. Sure, there probably are. And on to the results. Again, we do this semi-annually at this point. It actually was done quarterly in 2004. Some interesting numbers. All of the numbers are reported in, for those of you who are into chemistry, in nitrate as nitrogen to compare the results from the April sampling of this year as compared to last October. We did see water levels come up somewhat. We had a nice wet winter this year. On average, out of the 25 wells that were sampled, 15 of the wells saw a decrease in nitrate levels. Six of the wells saw an increase. and four didn't have any discernible change. On average, if you look at all those numbers, if you take an average of all those numbers, the average nitrate concentration, again, in our shallow water, not our drinking water, our shallow water, is about 10.4 as of April this year. So that would be compared to a maximum drinking water level of 10. On average, we saw a 0.6 milligram per liter decline, again, coming from around 11 to around 10.4, again, since the last October sampling. And we're really, on average, we're about the same as we were 1 year ago in April of 2004, if you look back 1 year ago. 14 of the 25 wells that are shown on that list were over the maximum level back in October, and we've dropped a few off that list, and now only 12 are over that amount. There's a copy of a full study here which has all the data, all the lab results. If you look at some of the trends over time, you would note that since at least the early 80s, where we have data back that far, the nitrate levels are fairly, they follow sort of a flat line equilibrium that was noted in the report. We don't report the data back from the 60s and 70s when much of the development occurred, but it would make some sense. We've been in a moratorium since this data was reported, and levels are fairly consistent since that time. So that's a summary of the nitrogen monitoring study, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Have any board questions at this time? Director Cecina?
Rob, you keep talking about upper water levels is where this testing occurs. Now, if I understand this correctly, our groundwater is divided into five horizons, A through E, D and E. We drink from C. We want to be able to drink from A and B, are these shallow vadal zones.
Right.
Where is this testing occurring? Is it in zone C or A or B?
There are some water supply wells that have at least partial screens in zone C in the
right.
community. For the most part, if you look at the map and if you overlaid the zone boundaries on this map, not every zone is available in every area in the community. And basically, they looked at the shallowest first water for each well location, wherever that water was. So many of these wells are zone C wells, but if there was zone A or B available with a perched zones, then they sampled those as part of this program. Because that's what the regional board requires you to report on over time, is that first available water in each area.
But there's no way of telling from this map then whether we're testing A, B, or C.
No, you'd have to go back to some of the detailed information on water depths. Cleith had some notation in there as to how many of the wells were in the various zones. I don't know if it made
concentrations to be a little bit reduced. You're traveling through sand more. I don't know. I guess I want to make sure what we're looking at.
Right, and they're not testing, for instance, they don't, for each well, try to go down to a deeper level to test those. But I
right.
think it would be easy to put 7.9A, 7.9C, and then
gotcha.
You'd have a sense for continuity there.
Okay,
that's
thank
a good
you.
Comment.
Any other board questions at this time? Vice President Fouché?
I actually looked. Excuse me. At this report some time ago, and I did a quick calculation. I actually subtracted out the one well that tests well near Sea Pines. I think I can't remember the number at this time. It has a pretty high nitrate hit.
The 28, yeah.
Yeah, and when that one well is removed from the averages of all of the wells, it actually drops the average down to below 10. Mm-hmm. And that's, well, I'm assuming it's near where, it's near Sea Pines. I'm assuming it's getting some influence from the water from Monarch Grove that is allowed to dispose of their effluent at 22 milligrams per liter. Is there probably some influence from that, or do you think from the effluent from Monarch, or could be possibly driving that well up to a higher level?
It's a good comment, and I wouldn't want to speculate too much, but the nitrogen quantity in the Monarch plant would be somewhat less than a normal septic system discharge. They do have some nitrogen reduction through that plant, not a whole lot, mm-hmm. but they do have some. Also, I know that there was quite a bit of there were some horses over there and other source, potential sources of nitrogen over the long term. And those of you who live over there probably have a better history of that, but I've just heard that via rumor. But I wouldn't say that the Monarch discharge would be necessarily a primary source, since its discharge is generally less than the 28 that's currently tabulated there. It's at 22, so if anything, it should be pulling that down.
Okay.
Because I think over time, they've been pretty close to hitting that 22.
One other question. I'm not sure if you have the answer to this. Nitrates, how they move through the groundwater. Do they continue? Does gravity just keep pulling them down forever, or do they eventually decompose or change because they seem to, I'm not sure the depth of all those wells, I've looked at them in the past, but do they continue to convert to any other chemical as they're moving through the soil, or do they just stay a nitrate and just go down forever?
Well, once you're actually in the groundwater zone, you know, we've had a lot of discussion as to what happens below your leach field as it's traveling to groundwater, whether there's some denitrification there. And there was a very extensive study done by Metcalf and Eddy back in the late 90s, mid-late 90s, where they studied that effect. But I don't think it's what you're talking about. I think what you're asking is, once it's in the groundwater, does it persist over time, or does it change into potentially other forms? You know, nitrate's a stable element, unlike nitrite, that in the presence of oxygen will become nitrate. Nitrate is a stable compound and would tend to persist over time. I know that when Cleith looked at the saltwater intrusion question,
it's about effluent leaching into the bay, and here we have a test well that monitors quite low.
Yeah, 7N1 is perforated at only 61 feet, is a depth of 83 feet. The Third Street CSD production well. Do I have a detailed explanation for that? Obviously, there's a very solid barrier both to seawater intrusion at that location and to other forms of contamination. I don't know that they've done any detailed studies of the impermeable area that we call the aquitard. And maybe George has some follow-up comments on that. As I know, we all look at that well and go, it's right on the beach. How could it be so good? But it continues to produce good quality water over time.
Mr. Milanis, do you have something to add to that?
Yeah, the Third Street well, it's somewhat of an anomaly. The well is shallow. It does have some nitrates. I believe the last numbers I looked at were about 3.5. But it is, as Rob pointed out, it's a very well-protected well with barriers all the way around. So, in fact, the bay does not affect it. This well, I want to add, went through quite a bit of scrutiny because of surface water influence. If it were to be found, the county did a pretty extensive study on it. For us to use it, it had to be deemed not impacted by any surface water. Should there be an influence from surface water, then of course we'd have to put a water treatment facility or close it down. And after pretty extensive studies the county did years ago, they determined that in fact there was no surface water influence on that well. So we continue to use it. It's a small producer, but it's just one of those things.
Thank you. Director Tacker? Mr. Milanis, some of us have lived here for a really long time, and we got a letter today, or dated yesterday, October 9th, from a resident that talked about a drinking fountain at down in Baywood. And I remember when I was a little girl, we used to go there too, but it had a plaque on it that said, "This is the purest water in the state." And I remember people used to bring their jugs and fill it up. And I'm only asking you, I know you're relatively new to the community, but do you know if this drinking fountain came from that well?
I didn't know that, but I do have a resident several years ago brought in one of the old 5-gallon glass what are the bottles that say Baywood Park water on it. So, yeah, I'm sure it was.
Okay, Vice President Fouché.
Just one other question. We were talking previously about mapping. I was just wondering how much of an effort it would take to get a contour map of Zone C, upper part of Zone C, below grade, below original ground. I haven't actually seen one of those. I think Fugro may.
Just from that chart and then recontour it for Zone C is basically what you'd do.
That'd be a good picture.
Yeah, we can do that.
Thank you.
I have just a couple questions myself, and then we're going to open it up to public comment. Mr. Miller, could you explain what contributors, if any, other than septic tanks, might be influencing these numbers of nitrates in the perched water that's being tested? Are there any other contributors besides septic tanks that aren't completely denitrifying?
Right. That's a good question. I know that Metcalf and Eddy did study that one very extensively. Other natural organic sources from animals, horses, domestic animals is a fairly significant source. Airborne sources, in the event that precipitation interacts with airborne nitrogen sources from power plant or whatever other sources, can be one other additional source. Certainly surface water discharges from creeks that have upstream agricultural operations. Many of your fertilizers are sources of nitrogen, particularly if you over-fertilize those. We see some of that happening in places that have a lot of agricultural development. We see upward trends in nitrates from fertilizer operations. So those are sort of the biggies in my book. I'm sure there are others.
Thank you. The point being in that is that the contributors to these wells, even though they're sealed and even though they're getting surface waters and surface runoffs of nitrates as well as septic tank nitrates. Is that correct?
And to the extent that those, you know, that we make every attempt to try to prevent direct intrusion of surface water, but when that surface water percolates into the ground, it's a source of contamination. Yeah.
Thank you very much. That was a great overview of the report. I'd like to open it up to public now.
Ann Calhoun, Los Osos. This is kind of really interesting. If I understand Mr. Fouché correctly, if you remove, say, the input from the sea pines well, your average numbers drop to 10, which I guess is the legal limit, which is quite astonishing to me because it seems like the common wisdom is, oh, my God, we're all going to die in the street like dogs. You know, there's just this incredible, overwhelming problem, and it's 10.4 or close to 10. My question probably is totally idle speculation. Years ago when Resolution 8312 was put in by the regional board, that was supposedly a demand to put in a septic management district, and that, I presume, would be to bring septic tanks up to code, make sure that there aren't any leaking or pits that weren't working and so forth. If that had been done way back then, combined with water conservation, which would be low-flow toilets and so forth, in other words, less water put into the ground, what is puzzling to me is these numbers, 10.4, 10, seem so close. It isn't like the nitrates are coming in at 25 or 50 or some huge number. I could say it's probably just idle speculation. Would it have been possible, if the septic management district had been put in place and enforced, to have really possibly cut these numbers down even further?
Some of the organic and ammonia forms of nitrogen into the nitrate form, and then as it went into the ground, it wouldn't be able to denitrify, so that the function of a septic system is an important element to nitrogen. One thing to also note is I'm involved in a lot of small water companies where we have nitrate issues. We generally don't want to let the nitrates get all the way up to the maximum level. We really begin to watch it very closely when we're at half that level. So just a general comment, it's not necessarily great to be right at the level, but we do watch it when we get to half the level. Yeah.
Okay, Mr. Bearden.
Don Bearden, Los Osos. My water table, I live about a block away from the 8th Street well. My water table in my backyard is about 40 inches from the surface. So I'm discharging directly into the groundwater with my septic tank. And so I'm familiar with most of this stuff. If you look at your handout that you passed out last week, the draft report for seawater intrusion assessment, it has all that information in there that you're asking for. It has table 3 and table 4 tell you which aquifer it's in and how deep the well is and whatever information you want. And then back on page 48A, there's another the other report that somebody was asking for that shows the wells and at what elevation they're in compared to the contours. So all that information is in there.
Thank you very much. Ms. Owen? Pardon me, Mr. Barrow?
Would you like to join me? Hi, Al Barrow. And I wanted to, I'm 68 years old and I've been learning all my life and I've always learned something, so please do not be offended, Rob, if I teach you a lesson. Thank you. The National Deposition Program states that there's 6 milligrams per liter of nitrogen in rainwater. You realize that the atmosphere that we're breathing is over 70% nitrogen. So that wouldn't be an uncommon assumption. Now, the forms of nitrogen that comes down with the water is, what do they say, the April showers bring the flowers that bloom in May? That's because they get nitrogen. You try to put water on flowers without food, they don't grow. You know, we all need food. And I think you really have to understand when you look at that map, about 35% of the rainfall absorbs and doesn't run off. Is that about right, Rob?
Mr. Barrow?
Our rainfall,
okay. Yes.
About 35% of the rainfall is fairly accepted, does not run off.
It just depends on where and what.
I beg your pardon?
Depends on where and what. Just keep going.
Well, yeah, exactly. But, I mean, on an average, you know, Dr. Keller and I walked over there, and we saw many wells that the caps were off, and some of those numbers were coming from actually surface runoff. And some of the surface runoff is high in nitrogen. It's like 200 or 300 milligrams per liter. It's gone into some of those monitoring wells. And I don't know if all of the monitoring wells have had sanitary seals replaced on them. There was a program. I'm not sure that that's all true or not. That's a factor that I think we should consider. And I think another thing that you need to think about, this blown sand dunes that we live in has perched layers of clay all over. For millions of years, these formations have formed little bowls all over our aquifer, and we're never going to really be able to get rid of everything in it. It's never going to be perfect. The conditions of sanitary seals, I think what I'm trying to say here is wrapping up is that this is not an earthquake. This is not a tsunami. This is a condition that has existed in Los Osos for decades and decades, and it hasn't changed much, according to our engineer. This is not a panic situation. We have time to take care of our nitrogen. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Owen.
Lindy Owen, Prohibition Zone. Looking at the map, I was wondering if Rob could answer the question if how this map compares with 1983 when the regional board established that we would have to stop using our septic tanks. That's 18 years ago. It's a few years back. That's one question. And Should I go ahead and just put my...
Just ask them all and then hang on.
And then I'm completely bothered by right below Cabrillo Estates. I wondered if he could address... I mean, at one point in January, December of last year, it was 46 milligrams per liter. That's huge. That's more than anywhere else in all of Los Osos is occurring down near Monarch Lane, the golf course, and directly below Cabrillo Estates. So I think that's the burning question for a lot of us. Does Cabrillo Estates add to our nitrate problem? I'm just curious about how those clay lenses work, and if he could address that, I would appreciate it. And then thirdly, in my studies about nitrate and actually vedo zones with septic tanks, they actually had studies that said that if your septic leach field goes straight into water, that they found that there was denitrification even then. Pretty strange. And when you look at the map, you begin to say all the low-lying areas, Cuesta by the Sea, 8.9. That's below any danger level. And most of those homes are sitting in groundwater, I believe. Maybe Rob could answer that. And same with over here along the edge from the 8th Street well, 2.2, up to 19 around the bend. So those are my three questions.
Thank you, Ms.
That when you go to decades previous, and you overlaid that, you might see an increase over time, but I think that'd be interesting to have all the data. Although I know for a lot of the old data, there was a lot of speculation as to surface water intrusion, and we're now getting, I think, very good sampling protocols that we're getting documents of every sampling event as to its time and nature, and we've really tightened all that up. So from this time forward, for the CSD sampling events, we're feeling very good about the integrity of the samples. As to Cabrillo, because it's not specifically a part of this monitoring effort, I'd really like to beg a little more time to look at that with Cleith. Wouldn't want to speculate on that tonight. And then with respect to the denitrification in the Vado zone, my knowledge base comes primarily from Metcalf and Eddy's Task F, when they did a very detailed analysis, and I've got a copy in my office if anyone's interested, of the amount of denitrification that occurs when you do have groundwater separation, because they were able to sample for it. They had slanting pipes where they actually took samples before it got into the groundwater. Not too sure how you would do it if you were actually mingled with groundwater right there, how you could see whether that denitrification was really happening or whether you're just getting dilution. But I know that Metcalf and Eddy looked at that for when you did have separation. It's a very interesting study.
Oh, thank you. Ms. Nolan has just one more question. Excuse me.
Just quickly. Go for it.
So basically what you said, the data from the 1982 decision hasn't changed much, and the impact of the extra housing hasn't really made a difference, because we're talking about, I'm guessing, 2,500 more homes since 1982 have been adding to our aquifer pollution, supposedly. I'm just curious if you see that the addition of the homes didn't make a big increase in the nitrates.
Thank you.
I think we had... Thank you, Madam President. I think we had the moratorium go into effect in 88. Someone shake their head if that's right. Just, again, you can look at the trends for yourself and make your own determination, but it appears that it's a fairly flat trend when you look at the wells where we do have data going back that far. Again, we're not plotting the 70s and the 60s when the community was very sparsely developed.
Could you put those on your list for things to do for an engineer's report in the next meeting?
Sure.
Just those two questions? That'd be great.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Yeah, Lou Tornatsky, Los Osos. Just a couple points of clarification for Rob and others.
Could you put the microphone and address the board?
How's that?
That's better.
Lou Tornatsky, Los Osos. A couple points of clarification. As I understand it, there are 25 shallow wells that are the sources of the data, and they've been the same sources of the data throughout the monitoring of the community, and that the numbers and parens are extrapolations from those data points. And is that correct?
Mr. Tarnowski, could you ask all your questions and then we'll address them for the, unless you have a follow-up?
And I guess I see this 28 hotspot over here right next to a golf course. I'd be curious of how, again, sort of reflecting some of the other questions, how long that's been there and how that ever happened that we sort of have this wonderful negative impact on our groundwater, basically for a number of people who have wealth. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Result for that particular well, if I'm getting close to the...
Well, you got two sorts of data points. You got one that's in a rectangle, and then you got others that are in parentheses, which are real data.
The rectangles are the actual data points.
And the others are estimates or some extrapolations, correct?
Thank you. That really clarifies your question. I think I've got it nailed now. The numbers that are in parentheses are the contours where, again, they attempted using the known data to plot lines that depict, again, theoretically depict, which I think is your point, the areas where you have a constant concentration of nitrate along that line. It's like a contour line for elevation.
Yeah, I understand.
So yeah, that is a calculated value. It's not a tested value, and it's based on the points surrounding it. So I think that, if that answers your question.
Follow-up question? Yes.
Yeah. Isn't this a relatively small number of data points to characterize the groundwater condition of a community of this size?
In my experience, no. This is actually a large number of data points for a community of this size. We rarely get good data from this many wells. Often it's maybe half this many to reach some of the same conclusions. For instance, I work for Templeton and other communities where our groundwater monitoring would be 6 or 7 wells as opposed to 25 wells. So it's a pretty extensive monitoring network for our size.
Thank you, sir. Ms. Denson.
Good evening, Madam President and Board. I have a question that I'd like you to ask Rob Miller for me. I'd like to know what the well reading at well number 13L5 in Monarch Grove was before all 83 homes and 44 motel rooms were built during the moratorium. Also at that time, the golf course was increased in size by hundreds of yards cut into the estuary, and the Pecho wetland was cut into to add that putting green. So there must be using even more chemicals on the greens now. But I'm concerned also that I heard that they're mixing that sewer water that they process from those Monarch Grove homes with our lower aquifer water to water the golf course, because I guess it's not treated enough to put on the golf course alone. They're drawing from our well, from our drinking water well. But I really, really like to know, because that was when the moratorium was put in. These homes came in. Nobody said anything about it. I wrote to the EPA a big, long letter and got a smokescreen back. They ignored me. I've got copies of the letter to Mr. Leland. Oh, gosh, I can't think of his name. It's at home. But it was wrong. They cut the trees. We did protest. I think Mr. Buell said the other evening that where were you when they were cutting the trees? We did protest. We protested when Monarch Grove Elementary went in with a Measure A mess too. And I always wonder why they shut down Sunnyside School to waste more money to put that in and cut more trees. But what was the well nitrate level at 13L5 before those homes went in? I'd really like to know what's in the
thank record. Thank you, Ms. Jensen.
Thank you
very much. Mr. Miller?
Thank you, Madam President. I have seen, but here's a copy of the chart for your review, and it's all over the place. So,
thank you very much. Sure. Can you get that report for him to take a peek?
I have a test well in my yard. They read them twice a year.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you, Ms. Jensen.
Ms.
McPherson?
Mm-hmm. Hello. I think it's interesting to look at the moratorium and the fact that the data is essentially described as flat. The growth and the changes in land use over that time should have influenced something, and if it didn't and it's still flat, then that is an influence in and of itself. I guess what I think is really important for our community in the long run is that we have a workshop and we really explain completely where nitrogen comes from, what parts, what we're contributing because we have ineffective septic tank systems in some places, how some septic tanks are very effective in some places, And we put some maps up there that don't chop off where I live. I happen to live with a lot of other people up in this area at the bottom of the screen, and there's no real numbers there for us above where that water tank is and all. Anyway, because of that, we don't get to know where we're at, and we don't know how long it'll be before we ought to maybe tie into a sewer system or check our depth to groundwater. So anyway, I think that a workshop is really important. Having those maps and overlays that you asked for would make it very easy, as much as, you know, you can go back and forth between maps and kind of correlate information. I think that it's it makes it more user-friendly to do that for the public. In the 50s, 60s, and 70s, things changed a lot. But what we do know is that Duke existed. And Duke puts out NOx, and that's a major contributor to nitrates. And nobody really wants to look at that. But I'd like to see how many tons of nitrogen emissions are part of that. And I think that should be presented in a workshop. Then we should be looking at all of the contributors, not because we don't want to build the sewer plant, so don't get afraid. It's because we just need to know the truth. You know, it sets you free, right? The population has increased since the moratorium, and those numbers, again, if you have an increase in population and a change in land use, and you're fertilizing golf courses and you're building more houses, and then everything remains flat, then you're actually doing something that's probably pretty good. Wade Brim report noted that there were some wells that were in pretty good shape, but a lot of these wells were replaced and upgraded, and especially after the CSD came in. They did some really good work in making the wells at least believable. They made major repairs and brought them up to standard. I had a couple other things here, but I think it's just really that workshop. I hope that we can have a workshop maybe in November along with our water issues, water conservation, and bring it all to the forefront. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next speaker. Were you... Okay, I think there were some
Hi.
Other people coming.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. Would you allow...
Being concerned.
Do you have any other questions for the board, ma'am? Is that the
Could you
question?
Please ask Mr. Miller that question?
I'd be glad
Thank
to.
You, Madam President.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Madam President. Good question, Ms. Clark. Although I do have a reverse osmosis system in my house, I think from obviously a civil engineer would probably think about this too much, for one thing. But if it falls within state standards, then I would feel comfortable drinking it. You know, it's part of what I believe to be why we have state standards is they set the levels at safe limits. And if they're below those limits, I would drink the water and give it to my family to drink. The reason that we try not to let it go above half is not because we're worried about delivering water that is just below the level. It's because things change month to month, and we don't want to have a violation over the level that's unforeseen. We want to be able to respond if things continue to go up before they get to be right there. So in the water companies I'm talking about, where you have, you know, levels that are doubling within a year or two, we see action needs to be started when you get to the half mark, so that when you get up to that level, you've done something about it before you go over the level. And that's usually how I approach it, and for other companies, if that answers that question.
I have one follow-up question, Madam President. Could you please ask Mr. Miller if he indeed thinks that the moratorium instituted by the Regional Water Quality Control Board was in fact a prudent action to address those water nitrate levels? Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam President. It'd be hard to speculate on that. Obviously, septic systems are a source of nitrates, and we do have stable levels. Whether those nitrates would have continued with a more aggressive trend without the moratorium would be speculative. I think as density is an issue, that could be the case. And as to the prudence and so forth, they follow their own guidelines for what they want to do, but septic systems are a source of nitrates. So,
thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
Hello, Alon Perlman, Prohibition Zone.
I have a couple of comments. One is to announce that the LOCAC has a meeting tomorrow, 7 p.m. in this location. Another comment is that it might be useful to have the agenda posted on a sandwich board at the entrance. That way we can save some paper, and if we do end up running out of agendas, in fact, the whole thing, a sandwich board is just an idea that might work to save some paper. And I think a meeting recently was so popular that we actually ran out of agendas. So that's just a question. The rest, if I'm just going to face this way, it's questions for Mr. Miller. And the reason is I just happen to have by training, I can read that kind of map like it's run, spot, run, Dixie, Jane, etc. So could I address Mr. Miller? The map, the clines, the topography that is apparent from the drawn by a computer based on a series of points, and it doesn't, as opposed to a topography map, which is somewhat more realistically determining, this is actually two maps, a topography map, which you see, which can be very delicately surveyed, and then 25 data points, which are apparently, have apparent concentrations based on, which I think is a computer program that draws them, and I had some questions, very technical, about that. So maybe after the break I could ask those. I'd like to, I'm sure it's going over a lot of people's heads, but maybe point sources might be a term that might be used in the future. It's pretty simple. It explains, for example, that a particular area could have a single contamination causing the appearance of what we're seeing over here, for example, the golf course. So I'm very interested in that, and I guess to close, is there some place where I could see the entire progression of these maps and the data associated with them?
Okay, thank you, Mr. Perlman. And Mr. Miller, could you answer? And then good questions for the workshop, too, as well, for more detail.
Yes, indeed. Thank you, Madam President. For Mr. Perlman's questions, our office didn't produce that map. In looking at it, if you just look at the uniformity of the contours, I know for our office, we can contour pretty much anything. You give it the data points and the computer will generate contours. I'd have to check with Spencer Harris at Cleith & Associates to confirm that he let the computer generate those, but just based on what just visual inspection, it appears that they probably did, and we can answer that question. As to the progression of those, I know that, again, Cleith's office has done a good job keeping track of every map that they produce so that you can see some progression. So we could compile those maps and flip them forward on a slide and see how they change over time, at least the maps that the CSD is producing, which is fairly recent data since we really started our sampling events, but it's data that we feel good about. So, yes, that's one of the reasons why we're doing this, so we can flip through those maps sequentially.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Bob Stark, I live in Los Osos. We have a domestic well that's located right about Napomo and South Bay Boulevard. It's close to your well 18A. It has nitrate concentrations of about 15, which is similar to what you have. This well has been in existence since about 1967. We've been testing it continuously for that length of time. We haven't found that the concentrations have gone up at all. The concentrations have gone down a few times. They wander around, but generally, they stay within that range. We have another well, domestic well, that's been in service for about 25 years. Across the street, the nitrogen runs about 15, the same as the one across the street. This is 50% over the recommended maximum. We've raised kids, grandkids, nitrogen concentrations anywhere from 30 to 45. Do you feel justified in using that when your total solids are about two times what the maximum recommended should be? I would throw that well out and wouldn't even consider it in an average. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mm-hmm. Yes, Mr. Alibi. I'm sorry, Mr. Miller, you had an answer to the questions. I apologize.
Oh, no problem. I find that data very interesting and definitely appreciate Mr. Stark's ability to bring forward some historical data that goes back farther than I go back. And with respect to the golf course well, I think what he was alluding to is the salt concentrations in the water, that those were also elevated. And I do think that's an important consideration with respect to the review of that well.
When the salt goes up, when the salt concentrations are high, the nitrates will also be higher?
Yeah, in other words, there's an overall source of mineral activity in that well, and therefore you can't necessarily separate out nitrates as being a defining factor in it. So I think that's something that should be reviewed.
Thank you. Mr. Alibi?
Chris Alibi, Los Osos. As I recall, I might be wrong on this, about 10 years or so ago, the maximum concentration of nitrates allowed in a drinking water was, I believe, 45 parts per million. I don't know how that compares to 10 milligrams per liter, if that's the same or not. Okay. We got a little curious about how much nitrate that was, and at a maximum concentration of 45 parts per million, we figured you'd have to drink 127 gallons of that water to equal the nitrate in a pound of bacon. And I would advise, there's a lot of newer people here that maybe haven't read it, I think it's the 1993 nitrate report, has all kinds of goodies in there, one of them being that basically all of our septic tank water is completely denitrified after it goes through 4 to 6 feet of the soil. And that was one of the reasons that the good burgers of Los Osos didn't go for a sewer plan back in the 70s, figuring that we would lose our water through a sewer system and we'd have to get state water to get it somewhere else. But that's an awful lot of water to drink. And I don't remember, there were some test wells, I believe about 12 of them done in the late 80s. One of them is underneath the house next door of my mom's, where she lives. And they got the same results there. Those results were taken directly from underneath leach fields, scattered all over Los Osos. And same deal. That's one of the problems with our, got a lot of people upset about the conventional sewer, is that it was going to take 25 to 30 years to produce any results in the way of nitrates. And that was ridiculous.
That is a very interesting study. It did only look at three systems that did have groundwater separation. And I think they concluded somewhere between 60 and 70% denitrification where there was adequate separation.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Dugan? Is anybody else speaking? Mr. Murgison, okay.
I'm asking this first question for Keith Swanson, who's not here. He called me. The 2.2 reading along the bay in Baywood, he'd like Rob to give an explanation of why that might be. My comment's pretty simple. Water conservation. I think Rob just said it. I'd like him to repeat it if I heard it right. Water conservation would have an effect on the nitrate level. Correct, Rob?
Mr. Miller, yes. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Madam President. I'll answer that question first and try to get back to Keith's. My statement was that if you conserve water, you're going to reduce the amount of water that goes into these perched and upper zones, resulting in generally declining water levels, more separation. So hopefully more systems would have that required separation, would be able to denitrify. The pounds of nitrogen actually going into the ground wouldn't change, because what comes out of our bodies stays the same, but hopefully you would have a little bit more separation to allow for denitrification.
Follow-up comment?
So if water conservation had been extensive 4 years ago, would you anticipate that these numbers might be down by now? And in conjunction with that, would water conservation have a quicker effect than the 30-year projection that the project projects for nitrate levels to decrease dramatically?
Mr. Miller.
Thank you, Madam President. I'm not bold enough to speculate on that point. However, I do know that if some assumptions were made relative to groundwater separation, that the current model that the CSD has could probably do some rudimentary predictions on that type of an effect if that was desired.
And one last thing, in areas where the depth to groundwater is greater, it would probably have a quicker significant effect, correct?
Madam President, as I recall from Metcalf and Eddy's study, and again, they didn't test 100 systems, it was three, they found that once you had that initial vadose zone, having further zone below that didn't have a substantial effect on denitrification, that 30 feet was about the best you could do, and as you got below that, you didn't see anything substantially greater, probably because the lack of the appropriate oxygen conditions as you got deeper, perhaps. I forget what they speculated.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm going to close public comment. Oh, I'm sorry, this gentleman here.
My name is Al Downs, and John, would you ask Rob if anybody took a glass jug of water and went down?
Mr. Miller, we talked a little bit about it, but Mr. Margeson brought it up again. It's also a big question of mine, that 2.2 and the lowest readings of nitrates around the bay has always been a big question in my mind, too.
Thank you, Madam President. We did discuss that a little bit relative to the district supply well that is at that location, shallow well right on the bay. I think Mr. Milanis referred to county studies that were done previously that showed that well was not under the influence of surface water but was well protected by barriers to groundwater movement, resulting in a high degree of protection for that particular well. We're certainly glad to have it, and it does have very low nitrates.
Okay, I'm good. One quick follow-up question, and I got to close it up.
I have it real quick. I was given some donated minutes, so I wanted to just quickly. One of the questions that came up had to do with testing the ground, groundwater, and I don't think anybody mentioned lysimeters or using a way of testing. We put in a denitrification wetlands project, and it was on the river, and so the water, groundwater, was very high. And what we found in our research was that the denitrification occurred in the first 3 feet. And it was just interesting that if we're going to be looking at places where we have a certain amount of separation and what should we do, should they be hooked up or not hooked up to the sewer, we really need to take a look at what's going on in that and actually quantify that instead of just having, you know, a few test wells and making some major assumptions. Because if fines are going to take place with individuals, and I don't mean to really go there, but if they are, I think it's really important for people to know what they're looking at as far as is the real impact and where that happens, and in their defense. Thank you.
Thank you. Did you have any comments on that, Mr. Miller, this time?
No, only that lysimeters were installed as part of that Metcalf and Eddy study and were part of the data stream that they generated.
Okay. I'm going to bring it back to the board now. Looks like Director Sennett has a comment.
Thank you. I'd like to ask Rob if you could direct me to a histogram of the different ground distance from ground to groundwater of the different well sites.
There's a table of the distance to groundwater at the different well sites in the study. right there under Table 2, water level comparison. You can see how that migrated over time. That's on page 3 of the study.
Do we have something, you know, going back 10 years to where we could see where development may have had some impact or not?
As far as groundwater levels go, I believe we do have data back that far. And trying to think of where that was compiled. Again, Spencer would have that within his computer program. He's gone back and entered all of that data so it could be pretty readily compiled, I believe.
That would be a very interesting component to add to this report, because it certainly shows the mechanical problems that have occurred with the leach fields and septic systems occurring because of this, you know, a possible rising in the groundwater table for the lower, for the upper aquifers, the perched ones. And, you know, this is very similar to an occasion where, you know, this could be, you know, something that occurred just like flooding that maybe we could apply for some type of grants to, you know, to address this problem as a problem that's occurred because of poor planning or lack of planning for this occurrence. I think that would be helpful in here to possibly give us some information that you know, say we want to use for applying for those water management grants.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Sand. I think it does have a lot of analogies to surface flows and storm flows, and we can look at 10 years' worth of data for water levels.
Director Cecilia, any more comments? Any comments on this end? Director Tacker?
Mr. Milanis, can I ask you a question? Something that came up in public comment, I think it was Mrs. Clark, she asked about what's coming into our houses, and I don't remember if you said any of these were supply wells.
I believe the only supply well in the packet you have before you is the Third Street well, and mainly because it's in such a it's in a shallow aquifer. All our wells, production wells, are in the mainly in the D and E zone.
Okay, so we're not providing any water from these, other than that one well that you said was had to be proven very safe.
Right. The Third Street, there is, I believe, it's 3.5 parts per million nitrate as nitrogen. And we've seen that for several years now. But all the other wells, I believe the nitrate as nitrogen is below one.
Below one?
Yes.
Thank you. I think that's reassuring. Thank you.
Director Sennett.
I understand over on the west side there have been some wells that have been abandoned, some water production wells that have been abandoned because of high nitrate.
Yeah, we have a well siting report that currently will be coming to your board for further review as to where we want to go in development of additional wells for the district. There was one well, the 12th Street well, that was had to be closed down for high nitrates. There's a Farrell Street well that we're looking at possibly rehabilitating that as a backup to the Palisades, which is a high-producing well. However, there's some conflicting information as to why that well could not be used further. I understand sanding was an issue, but at the same time, there's a possibility that the pumps, when they were initially put in, were not sized correctly. So we're going to...
Bruce Buell, Madam President. Cal Cities historically operated a shallow well at the corner of Skyline and Solano. That well was abandoned in the late 90s because of a nitrate contamination. It's in the same trough. There's a syncline there where you see those high values. And Cal Cities had been blending the water from that well with their Pecho well and their Rosina well, but it got to a point where they couldn't achieve their desired blending, and they abandoned it. They're continuing to monitor its nitrate contamination.
Thank you very much. Any other questions from the board? Director Sinnott?
I had a question. Sea Pines Golf Course also uses, to supplement the Monarch Grove discharge, they also use deep water aquifer to water their properties, don't they?
They have two wells. One is near the ponds on this map. The well right on Skyline is used to irrigate their first hole. So they actually have two separate irrigation systems. They have that well that they use for the first hole. And then of the consumption of the golf course, the roughly 80,000 to 100,000 gallons per day of irrigation required by the golf course, about two-thirds of that is well water. Some of that is shallow and some of it is deep supply.
So is that considered good for domestic quality? Do they monitor it for?
They monitor it. It is very high in nitrates and TDS. It would not be a desirable supply for the community.
Thank you. Any other comments from the board? I'd like to thank the audience, and I'd like to thank staff, all of you, for helping with this explanation. This is, for me, it's been long overdue to take one of these reports and talk about it in detail so the public has a better idea of what we've been reading every quarter. And I want to thank everyone for participating in the conversation. And we are going to schedule a workshop. I've got it on my list. And please provide input to us for that future workshop. We'd like to hear from you. I'd like to have a motion to accept the report and move on.
I would motion that we accept the report and thank Rob for presenting it.
Do you have a second, please?
So, second.
Okay, Ms. Fagan.
Director Tacker?
Yes.
Vice President Fouché?
Yes.
Director Cicina?
Yes.
Director Sinnott?
Yes.
President Schicker?
Yes. Thank you, everybody. Let's take a five-minute break, and we're going to decide. I'm going to put this out there right now. We have an hour of closed session, and our goal was to finish at 11 tonight. So we have no time left to do these other two items, or we're going to have to agree as a board to extend for a little while. But we're really going to try to keep shorter meetings and keep to that rule for everybody's sake. Let's take a five-minute break, and we'll be right back. While everybody's coming back to their seats, I have two announcements to make for the public. The announcement is general public comment. We are going to have general public comment at this special meeting, and it will be after the last item of the agenda. I've had several requests. We made a promise, and we're honoring it. So we're going to do that before closed session comment at the end of the meeting. So keep posted. We're only going to do one more agenda item. Then we're going to have general public comment. And then we're going to have closed session. Okay. So that's what we're going to do. That's one announcement. But I would please ask that you respect our time, too, and keep your comments as succinct and pertinent as you possibly can. Tonight, also, I also wanted to make an announcement that tomorrow night in this same room at 7 p.m., LOCAC is sponsoring a workshop on water. And we are going to vote to have an adjourned board meeting there, but we'd like all of you to come, too. There will be some taping of this meeting. It's at 7 p.m. We will be participating in this meeting, and we would like you to come, too. It's a LOCAC, Los Osos Community Advisory Council's meeting, and they're scheduling it. It's kind of like a panel discussion and questions about water issues that concern all of us, and I surely would like to invite the public to attend. Tomorrow, 7 p.m. in this room. And Cleith and Associates will be there to give a brief summary of their saltwater intrusion report and their groundwater management report. So, yes. I will explain adjourned board meetings when we set it up after the agenda items. Mr. Miller.
Madam President, it's my practice to generally recuse myself from items where our contracts are being considered, so I'm going to do that.
Mr. Miller will be recusing himself, and we will be dealing with only one more item tonight in open session, and that's item number 4. And I'll wait for Mr. Miller to leave the room. And Mr. Milanis will be presenting. Item number 4 is retain district engineer to prepare design for water master plan contract number 11. That's the 9th, 10th Street, and Farrell water main upgrades, and or amend or modify the requested action. That's the item, and Mr. Milanis will give a short report.
Yeah, thank you, Madam President. Before you, the contract is an upgrade of the water system. It involves 9th Street and 10th Street, 9th Street and Farrell. This is a little bit unusual because one of the stipulations when we issued the capital improvement projects were the program manager is Wallace Group, the program manager was not going to bid on any of the design contracts. Now, what makes this a little bit different is the contract itself is a $36,000 contract. It's a very small with respect to some of the other contracts in our capital improvement project. And this is the fourth design contract to be released. This needs to run parallel with contracts 9 and 10, which are all upgrades. Penfield Smith is the consultant on those. I've included 3 reasons why we ought to take exception, and represents 1% of the contracts 9 and 10, but it's almost 10% of this contract. Number 2, Wallace Group is going to need to be involved in the process anyhow with whoever consultants. There are associated fees with that, and we could save those fees right up front if they're just the guys doing this contract. And then the third is, again, the additional time it takes to review the project at different milestones in the design. Wallace Group would have to basically work with another consultant. And again, there's additional fees. So what I'm asking is the board make the recommendation to execute this contract to the Wallace Group. And there is a resolution to that effect that recognizes the reasons for this. So with that, I'll be glad to answer any questions the board may have.
Thank you very much. Any questions from the board about this contract? It's pretty straightforward. It's in the plan. Could I have public comment at this time about this contract? Is there anybody who would like to make public comment about this project?
George is going to be surprised by this, but I actually agree with the recommendation, and I think you should go ahead with it.
Thank you very much. Mr. Bearden?
I don't know if Mr. Margetson has read the proposal here, but it's something after his own heart. It talks about identifying new water conservation measures and a bunch of other stuff besides just putting in the pipes. And so it talks about possible audits and retrofit kits and new shower heads and shut-off valves and flow restrictors and toilets and stuff like that. I don't know if anybody had pointed that out as part of that project.
Mr. Bearden, just for your I'm sorry about that. That's item number 3, which we postponed. And item 4 is the one we're talking about instead. It's just that contract on water mains. Yes, it's been postponed. We're only doing item 4 this time, which is just the water mains.
No, it's not. They divided it up. But thank you for that.
Yes, but thank you. It's a different. It's just this one item, which is a contract number 11 this time. They divided up the topic. Okay. Is there anybody else closing public comment? How about board comments? Can I have a motion, please?
I move that we retain the district engineer to prepare the design for Water Master Plan Contract 11.
Second, please.
I'll second.
Mrs. Vega.
Director Sennett?
Yes.
Director Cicina?
Yes.
Vice President Fouché?
Yes.
Director Tacker?
Yes.
President Schicker?
Yes. Thank you, everybody. All right, now I'm going to open the floor up to general public comment. This is just general public comment on any item. And please, okay. Pardon me? Rob, you can come back now. Okay, this is just general public comment on any item of interest.
Richard, how long can the CSD hold out with the money on hand? I mean, I'm concerned because I'm a taxpayer, and I'm wondering, you know, what's going to happen here? That's pretty much it.
Okay, thank you very much. Would you like to take this, Mr. Blesky, at this time?
Yes, Madam President. Let's see, the first question has to do with what the cost per day is for the suspension. We're hearing there's a lot of figures out there, but they're not determined yet. I mean, I've heard figures up of $218,000 a day. I've heard figures as low as $88,000 a day. There are costs going up. We have sat down and talked to the contractors because, as we had mentioned before, we're looking at what parts of the collection system may be applicable or salvageable to not only mitigate the cost to the district, to give us a product possibly of what work they could complete on the collection system, but also what possibly would have a mitigating effect on the contractors themselves. Those discussions are ongoing as we speak this evening. And we have met with Bernard and Whitaker, and they've been it's been some good talks. But it's premature to say what those costs are. If, like the scenarios you're pointing out, I'm sure there will be some very tough negotiations and there will be impacts to the district, and we would finalize those numbers and bring those back. Next, the latter part, there was a couple other questions.
The mobilized question and the how long can we hold out question.
Well, let me take the last one first. We're expecting a state revolving fund disbursement here in the next few days. And contacts with the state revolving fund that we've had are indicating that payment, I'm not going to say check, that payment is going to be, we should see that because that's for work that's been accomplished to date. So if that occurs, our reserves for right now should be in pretty good shape for the immediate future as we proceed along evaluating other courses of action on the contracts, on the audit, and on the reevaluation of alternatives to put in place Proposition B, which would be to move the plant to another location. And the second question was the
about
demobilizing.
The demobilized costs versus.
Pardon?
You asked about demobilizing costs.
Yeah.
Was your second question?
It's totally demobilized. Yeah. Yeah. The demobilized cost. I'm sure when Proposition B goes into effect, we'd be entering negotiations to determine those impacts. And there's going to be a lot of factors that affect that. And we'll bring that back for the public to bring all those parts. I know that Monterey Mechanic will want to sit down and talk to us about a lot of things. They'll have a lot of issues. And not to get into details at tonight's meeting, but those are out there.
Proposition B may not withstand legal challenge.
And I would have to defer to the board. As far as the collection system, without, you know, committing to any kind of course of action at this meeting this evening, let's say things go well. On one end, you know, let's put the worst case first, and I'm not saying this is what we're looking at, but, you know, that would be basically terminating the contracts. And I don't want to talk about that because then, you know, that's something we're trying to avoid. But on the good end right now is that we believe we have options in front of us that will allow us to construct specific portions of the system as it is or slightly modified to keep the contractors working through a period that would be into, the January-December time frame. So we're entertaining that. Now, we've got a lot of work to do on what that system would be. Like, is it going to be low pressure? Are we going to go with the current gravity? And those talks are going on, and we've tasked out, the contractors are putting together some figures for us, too, so that we can look at that small portion. There's some certain drainage zones that look very promising. In that case, we're looking at really mitigating the cost because we can take some of those overhead costs, or the contractors can, and basically kind of mitigate the delay cost to date. And we would get a product we could use to build the sewer system.
Okay. Mr. Do you have any follow-up questions? And then we're going to pass
Not
on to
really.
The minister.
I think it's going to get really bad. I think that all of us people who are trying to buy our homes here, we're going to get hit really hard. Mm-hmm. I really believe that. But I think it would be good for the people in the community as soon as possible to find out what the solid costs are going to be. Because it's going to come out of our pockets. That whatever that number is, that $218,000 a day, whatever it is, it's my understanding that that is not going to be reimbursed by the state loan. It's going to have to come out of the CSD's pocket. That means it's coming out of my pocket, coming out of your pocket, Chuck. Steve's coming out of your pocket. John, I assume you're buying a home here. It's coming out of your pocket. Julie's coming out of your pocket. Because ultimately, we pay the taxes for this. And that's money, I don't know, it's been shut down for, 7 days? It's costing us a lot of money. Anyway, that's all I've got to say. I just would like to see all the numbers out so all the people can see them. And if you could post them on a website, make them available so at least we know how bad the bite is going to be. Okay? Thank you very much again, Lisa, for the time.
Surely. Thank you. Thank you, too, for your comments. Mr. Lloyd, do you have a problem? Okay. Yes. Ms. Clark?
Gretchen Clark. Madam President, I too have a series of questions. I was hoping that we could get some sort of public disclosure of administrative costs since the district has changed hands. We have let go one person, Mr. Drake, but hiring Will Dan on retainer. My understanding costs. What is it costing us to transition the overlap? And one last question, what is the status of Measure B? Is it still being going to be heard in the Second District Court of Appeals, Sixth Division?
Okay. Some questions for Mr. Blesky and then one for Mr. McClendon.
On the admin costs, we're going to be, as part of the audit, I would imagine we'll go over that. But also when it comes to kind of the financial analysis of alternatives, I'm not sure if that's going to have a big impact on that. So you'll probably see it in the audit. What Mr. Buell's been, as an asset, is trying to take a number of years of very detailed history and transition it through. And And that's proving very valuable in formulating some of our alternatives, especially when it comes to dealing with the regional board and putting together that history and some of those very serious topics. As for my billing hours, and I'll just kind of reiterate that too, it's $140 an hour. And I think what the anticipation is that the 24 hours that were put out there was what we believe will be the average for the time that I'm here. But I hope you can understand too is that, as we discussed, is that there's going to be times when I'm going to be up here 5 days a week, especially during this really intense period over the next 2 or 3 weeks, and then try to mitigate that down to where and the other thing too is staff. We've been redistributing a number of the activities and kind of what we're doing to not only mitigate impacts on our existing staff in many areas, but also kind of to take some of the burden and distribute it off of me. As you noticed tonight, you have Mr. Miller here that is going to be handling some of the reports and stuff, so that you're not paying for me. So we're trying to be as efficient as we can. That number will come out. It'll be there when we have our final billing, and I know the board's very interested in that as well.
Yes, and then the status of Measure B, and yes, all those numbers will be public. It's just we don't have them prepared for you tonight.
Okay. And the Measure B, sorry.
Measure B is now effective, as it is the law of the district. I believe that answers your first question. Your second question regarding the hearing before the Court of Appeal, that is still currently scheduled for October 26th at the County Supervisors Meeting Room in Santa Barbara. In terms of costs, I would just point out that the first directive I received on October 1st from this new council was, and it was reported out of closed session, was to review all current litigation involving the district with a view toward trying to resolve as much as possible and minimize the further extensive outlay of costs. I have not independently verified this, but I've been told that there's been, over the last few years, $600,000 in legal expenses.
Our elected board, your decisions and support the community's decision to build a lower-cost, sensible, and sustainable wastewater project and intervene with actions to help retain the state revolving fund loans for work in progress, modify funding for the amended treatment project, intervene to suspend the discretionary fines threatened by the Regional Water Quality Control Board, and request that the Regional Water Quality Control Board update the time schedule order. So that's what the letter writing campaign will be about. It's going to be every Saturday and Sunday through the end of October. So that's Saturday, October 15th, 22nd, and 29th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. And the Sundays, October 16th, 23rd, and 30th, from noon to 4 p.m. And if you have any questions, you can call 476-2500.
Thank you very much. The location, did you mention the location of where? I wasn't sure that you did.
I failed to do that. No, it's 950 Los Osos Valley Road.
Thank you. Mr. Berger.
Don Bearden, Prohibition Zone. I live in a low spot in Los Osos. The groundwater table in my backyard is 40 inches from the surface. In my next-door neighbor's yard, it's only 36 inches from the surface. Across the street, it's 51 inches from the surface. My septic tank was installed over 20 years ago when the groundwater was much lower than what it is today. I doubt it would pass inspection for a STEG system. Therefore, I would need a new septic tank. A 60-inch high septic tank buried 18 inches in the ground requires about 78 inches of dry ground to get it into the ground. I don't have that. If I tried to install a new septic tank now, during the dry season, with my water table at 48 or 40 inches, the septic tank would float, and the water would cause the sand to slough under the tank, and you may not get it in the ground. An example of that can be seen on the corner of 9th and El Moro. The septic tank above ground, you'll need a, with the septic tank above ground, you'll need a grinder pump between the house and the septic tank to lift the sewage up into the septic tank. On a step steg system, you also then need another pump on the outlet of the septic tank to pump the effluent out of the septic tank into the step steg system. Now, this may sound not real, but I had this happen. In another house I had in 1998, I had to install a septic tank there, and the tank was, the water table was probably 60 inches then. The contractor was able to get it in the ground by quickly digging out and until the water was coming in the hole, getting the tank lowered into the hole and into the water, and then using his backhoe to push the tank down into the water while he immediately put a hose into the tank to sink it. That tank is only 6 inches below the surface.
And it is a little tricky to get them in, but I know that they do sit in water all the time. I'm not sure how he would feel about raw, you know, pipes holding raw sewage running in his drinking supply. I personally am much more afraid of pipes breaking. We're in an earthquake area. We're in shifting sand, and that's my biggest concern about not having the conventional plant is that raw sewage is not running under our streets currently. It's not running through our drinking supply. It's effluent, and I feel much safer with a tank, properly built tank installed, and there are ways to get them into the high water tables. Hopefully in time we would also possibly be using that upper aquifer for purple pipe. That's there's a number of ways that this is all going to be looked at, I think. But on another note, it talks here about water conservation, and during what's left of the contracts, I would request that we consider that they find a new source for dust control, because today I was over on the 18th, 17th, 16th, 15th Street area, and they have a truck that goes up and down. It doesn't stop. It just goes up and down every street, and it's watering a patch that's about 6 feet wide, 5 feet wide maybe, that isn't really dusty. It's actually been compacted back down. That's our drinking supply. We're in saltwater intrusion. We're concerned about that lower aquifer, and that's the water that's being used. I've asked a couple people, and it is definitely coming from upper from lower aquifer. So if we're going to continue to, you know, dust treatment, I would love to see that we get a better source of maybe using some upper aquifer water for it. I don't know how long this will go on. I don't see the need for it necessarily, but it's going on all day long. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Owen. Mr. Jones? Oh, did you want to? Did you have something to add, Mr. Blesky, to that?
Mr. Miller and I took a tour of the Tri-W site and got my truck stuck, so if you see a white truck out there. One thing we learned, just to comment on, we're looking at a dust control, no problem, but one of the problems the contractors have is that they don't maintain moisture content in this soft sand. And this is Duna Bay, too, and I've worked on sandy stuff before, as evidenced by my stuck truck. But one of the things they have is that if they don't keep it moist, they start having bearing capacity problems with their vehicles, and they start losing vehicles on their traveled pathways. But we'll look into that. That was one thing that we heard from the guy at the site that didn't pull me out, so we'll check it out.
Thank you. Vice President Fouché has a quick question.
Maybe I can ask this to Rob. I understand there's dead vans now that kind of secure tanks and water high water tables that seem to have solved that problem. Have you dealt with that? I was just talking to a couple engineers. They've mentioned that. Dead man anchors to secure the septic tank that's in high water.
Yeah, we do a lot of lift station work, pump station work in groundwater conditions where we pour a certain amount of concrete around a collar to keep the tank in that case, would be a wet well from floating. That doesn't mean that it's easy to do because it's during the backfill operation, you have to consider the fact that where you have...
Kind of confer where he's getting his source water real quick. The water that's being used as a source for that dust control is coming out of some well points that they've put in that are that are down 15 feet. Now, oh, that's for the Tri-W site. That, I'll check into that. This is Bernard, and they're on the other side of town. That's a different yard. Director Sassanian, we can check that. The only thing I can imagine is that they may want to. There would be some. We'll have a water truck out on the highway too, and there'd be some travel time. But we can check it out.
Okay, Mr. Jones is our next public speaker. Sorry. Thank you.
My name is Michael Jones. I'm from Los Osos. So if anybody thinks it's late right now, I just got back from the East Coast, so it's 1:15 for me. Anyway, I did get back late last night, and I saw some... the recording from the last meeting, and then I was sitting, I had no plan to come down here tonight, but I was sitting at home, and like four times people have come up here wanting to know how much are we wasting or is it costing to have the project stopped and idle construction workers or whatever. So let me throw a figure out here. $0. If we do not start the project, the reason why all this waste is going on is because we started the project before the election. So if we don't do that, the figure's zero. We don't start the project if the community, votes and says this is not the project for our town, then we're not in this big mess. So if you guys want to keep coming up here and asking these guys how much is it we're wasting every day because we stopped the project, I will follow you up here, and I will remind you whose fault it is that we're in this mess. The reason that we are in the spot that we are now with $200,000 a day or whatever is because it's whose fault is it? It's Stan Gustafson's fault. That's whose fault it is that we're idle and we have that we tore apart this land across the street. Starting this project before the election, and they had several opportunities to give this community an opportunity to vote on a project, is probably, I spent a week in Washington, D.C., and this was probably one of the words that come to me are un-American, and it's probably the most un-American political action that I've ever witnessed in my life, and that's why we're in this mess. It's Stan Gustafson's fault that we're wasting $200,000 a day and we tore apart this land before a vote of the people. It's Richard LeGros's fault that we're wasting $200,000 a day and we have construction workers here that tore apart a piece of property for a project this community did not want.
Right over here, the way they started before our vote. And it was about our natural drainage and those big, it was like canyon that went through there, and then it fanned out, and our water just was absorbed back into the aquifer naturally. And I wondered if in the original plan that they came and started that it was supposed to go that far to the east to cave those walls in, and what are they going to do about our natural drainage? Okay.
So thank you, Ms. Jensen.
Can you hold that one and let me go to the next one?
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And this is about enforcement of Measure B. Mr. Buell and Stan Gustafson have been asked many times over the past 4 to 5 years to let the people vote on the most costly project per capita in the United States, but this community has been denied that right. They, Stan Gustafson and Bruce Buell, kept saying that we voted for the project when we formed the assessment district. Rose Bowker told me the project was not connected to the assessment bond. At a recent meeting, Bruce Buell stated, well, the Tri-W site was hidden. It was hidden in engineer reports. The only way the people could get a vote was to create a recall and create Measure B05. The old CSD would not wait until the community voted before incurring great debt for us in starting the project before our vote, and by postponing our vote for almost as long as they could. Why shouldn't there be a class action lawsuit against the old 3SD and make them responsible for the destruction costs they incurred by not listening to this community? That's my questions.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Jensen. Could you handle the any of these questions or Mr. McClendon about the enforcement of Measure B, perhaps? That question?
I don't think it's appropriate just to make a comment on it. I think she's just making an opinion statement, and she's entitled to that.
That's the way we feel about it. Yeah,
Ms. Jensen, yes. I think those your comments are accepted, and they are your comments, and I don't think they can really answer those questions.
I'm just
really
glad
kind
that
of open-ended
I appreciate being able to state them. I wonder if I could state the condition that my nerves have been in for the last... It's been more than 30 days. They haven't stopped. You know, it still goes ding, ding, ding. The earth shook. The cabinet shook. I wake up in the morning. I have to put in earplugs. I wonder if we're going to stop them today. I sit there in the morning at 7 o'clock, and there it comes, and there it comes. I wear earplugs throughout the day. My nerves are shot. Not just because of the noise, but because of the indignity that we have suffered here as a people. Because of the old CSD board. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Mr. Sargent.
Dick Sargent, Los Osos. I was sort of impressed with the Monarch Grove Regional Quality Board hearing, and especially when Los Osos was mentioned, I think, more than Monarch Grove. Well, that the return of fines is not likely because we're the cause of the fines, and you can't hardly fine and return to the people that are fined. It's sort of a vicious thing. And the state loan, he mentions that. He went right down the line. So I'm sort of getting a little bit more nervous, and also, I don't like hearing people here blaming the past. You never get anything done if you look backward, and I'm looking forward, and I'm looking forward with anticipation of you guys producing. So blaming somebody won't justify not doing anything, and that's where I see some of this comment coming forth. And last of all, I think that my analogy of a train wreck playing chicken with a freight train is still right there, and I'm getting more and more frightened. So you guys better get at it.
Thanks for your comments. Next gentleman, please.
I'm Kelvin Malin, a Los Osos resident. And I think we do need to stop blaming the old CSD and take responsibility and kind of move forward with this. And I'd like to see some answers to just a few things, like why after the election there's no plan of action in place, and why we stopped the project without knowing the cost of doing so. And then what are we waiting? I hear we're waiting to see what to do. Till when are we waiting? Till December 1st, or do we have any time in mind? We're going to stop waiting and start doing something. And I did hear that $218,000 a day in the Tribune as the figure for stopping the construction. And I've just kind of quickly figured if till December 1st we wait, that's over $12 million. And I don't think the state fund is going to pay any of that, because that money was to build a sewer and not to not build a sewer. So I'm concerned. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I just have one brief comment. This new board's been in effect 11 days, and this is actually our fourth meeting, not our third. Our fourth meeting, we're working as fast as we can, And we have staff direction, and we're working on all these items that this gentleman is concerned about. Okay. Does staff have anything to add to the gentleman's questions this time? Okay. Next speaker.
Boy, I'd sure love to quit blaming the past, but every time I hear, any of the regulators talk about 30 years of foot dragging and not building a sewer, it just, you know, most of us weren't here 30 years ago, but we keep being blamed as being that past. And so I just can't quite get off it after just a week. I know that the Regional Water Quality Control Board has frightened our community. Our community needs to know that the issues of fines happen within a framework, within a regulatory process and a legal due process of law. Imposing fines is probably the most necessary thing that happens if you need to change your time schedule order. And I know that sounds kind of crazy, but we haven't been on time since we started when we saw those tapes. They didn't expect us there until probably May. I talked to the people up there myself. The loan had expired. People don't realize this in 2004. But we had to go get it recommitted. After the recall was served in December, it was clear that the CSD had to rush that loan through. The loan allowed the district, or the state allowed the district more time to rebid for a bid award and even for the election. A full 3 months they allowed. The board decided not to take that and instead to award a contract, because once you award a contract, it makes it almost impossible to get your funding recommitted, and it sets us up for a fine if we stop. That was deliberate. That was costly. That was a mistake. And I hope that we don't stop thinking about that while we're facing these fines, because until that is passed, it is not passed. I think we have to hold people responsible for the actions they take and the money they cost us. Now back to enforcement. Okay, it's a legal requirement. We're on official notice. Up to $11 million is threatened, and we need a new time schedule order. And I think that as this board works through that process, you're going to see step by step by step that they're taking action. Four meetings in 2 weeks is exceptional, and I think this is an exceptional board, and you ought to give them a chance. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And it actually is just 11 days. It's four meetings in 11 days. It's not even 2 weeks.
Dave Dugan, Los Osos. I watched that water board fiasco. The guy from Monarch Grove sitting there all smug. They knew they were going to skate, and they did skate. I watched the, after everybody left, he mentioned Los Osos. He said staff should talk to staff. That's the way they do it. They will set something up. That's. I don't see agencies getting together directly before staff talk, so we shouldn't have to worry about that. I want to touch on a different subject, though. There's a group of people, your supporters, that thinks that they can harass people so they can't come up here and talk. They know who they are. They're here. I got harassed outside the courthouse the other day. People telling me and others that we shouldn't come up here and take our 3 minutes to talk about whatever we want to talk about. So I would advise those people not to try to infringe upon my rights of free speech. They think they're doing you a favor, but they're not. And to be very careful, especially in public, when you approach me and try to make me not come up here and talk, try to convince me through humiliation or coercion that I shouldn't come up here and talk. And that is a promise, not a warning. Do not tread on me. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Is there anyone else who would like to have general public comment before we go to closed session? Public comment? General, anything you want.
General and responsible judgment that protects our long-term interests. I think, you know, this political debate that's still going on after the election doesn't serve any purpose, because you've got to make some difficult decisions. And the reality is, you know, if it's 100,000 day in debt that we're incurring, that means every 2 weeks it's $1 million. And the debt service on that on a 7% loan amounts to effectively $70,000 per year. That's like every 2 weeks laying off a staff member off our staff. And if we end up with a $20 million debt, that's 20 times that. That's $1.4 million in debt service a year. So that's, and our admin budget is about $950,000 a year. And you've got to consider that. And you, I know time is of the essence, but it's really of the essence. I'm going to go back to the SRF loan. You know, people treat it like it's the Los Osos revolving fund. It's not. It's the state revolving fund. There are currently over $800 million in priority A projects in that SRF list, with $11 billion in total projects. Those are competing projects. To this, you know, this insinuation that we're going to get that money, that needs to be taken into consideration. And on a $120 million construction loan, 7%, 20 years versus 2.5%, the cost is $72 million in difference. I think the other gentleman that spoke the other night was talking about how the cost can really ramp up, and you need to consider that. So anyway, I had some other comments regarding litigation. I'll wait. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else for general public comment? Looks like Mr. Margeson's coming up.
I don't think the administrative budget was $950,000, but that's not what I'm here to argue about. $218,000 a day. I'd love to see how that figure was actually arrived at, as opposed to just an analysis done on one page. Because if you take $218,000 times the two-year expected project to completion, run the numbers, you're at a little over $113 million if you delayed it for 2 years at that figure per day. And I'm talking just business days in a two-year process. That actually happens to be the same number that the project minus value engineering works out to, roughly, within a million either side. So I think that number is skewed dramatically. The other thing I came up to talk about is Gail mentioned due process. I have a real problem with what happened at the courthouse the other day on Friday at the hearing. The legal counsel for the taxpayer watch sitting at their table, or their part of the table, was the legal counsel for the Regional Water Quality Control Board. Regional Water, because it's not going to. I think you need to take that into consideration, and if there's a letter-writing campaign, you might want to make that part of it, because I don't think you're going to get a fair hearing before this board. Thank you.
Thank you very much. General public comment.
My name is Al Barrow, and I want to be very clear that Judge Hilton had supported every decision, every lawsuit that the district, the previous board, had pursued, every single one of them. But this time he said he does not have the conscience to interfere with your decision-making authority. That's what he said. And the water board shouldn't either. The Port of Cologne Act says you have the right to choose the type of project for your community. So I suggest don't be intimidated by that. Having said that, I'm going to make a request to each one of you to consider a workshop for Pentair pumps. And I think you've heard from previous speakers the concerns of the community. There's a lot of nervous people about $11 million fines, about the cost of the project, and all the rest. The sooner we get an alternative number up here that we can present to the public, the better. The sooner, the better. And I'm going to repeat that one more time. The sooner we get an alternative project number before the public, the better. The better for all of us. The better for the water board, the better for you. It will take a lot of pressure off of you. I don't know what the numbers are, but I was told today by DeLeo, Mr. Sennett says that Caltrans uses DeLeo in their directional boring, and DeLeo said that Tidwell's numbers were good. Okay? So we're not having a big change in numbers, but there's a lot of other factors, and Pentair wanted time to bring back a project estimate that they could back up. And I would like to ask before I leave, if you would ask while I'm still here, if Wallace Group knows anything about Pentair pumps. Could you please ask Rob Miller that question for me?
Is that the end of your public comments? After that, I will answer that
question. Would you do that now because you've allowed other people, and I'll just finish up?
Okay, and one follow-up question, and that's it. That's fair, like everybody else got. Okay? Mr. Miller, I'm trying to be fair. Okay, Mr. Miller, do you know anything about Pentair pumps?
I thank you, Madam President. Yes, it's a company that makes Myers as well as other product lines, and they are a pump manufacturer that I'm sure has equipment that was probably proposed to be used in this in the project over here, and also a product that we typically use in our business as well. So we know they're good products. From our perspective, whatever data points we can get for cost, knowing and recognizing the source of that, knowing that ultimately you'll be required to follow the public contracts code with everything that you do. But information is very important at this juncture, and whatever we can get, we'd be happy to analyze, and they're a big company.
Great. Thank you. Mr.
To finish
Mayor,
up.
Follow-up comment, question.
January 15th, Pentair presented for us the design of the step collection.
No one else stand up? And thank you. We're going to be going into closed session now, but I need to read what we're going to be talking about in closed session into the record. Okay, here we go. We're doing the last. Oh, wait a minute. I forgot one thing. We need to do director and staff comments in agenda and scheduling. Should I do that before or after closed session? Is there any opinion about that, Mr. McClendon?
You can do it right now.
Okay. I apologize. I want to do that first, and then we'll go into closed session. Would the directors or staff have any comments at this time? Yes? No? No? Oh, yes. Director Tacker has a comment.
I've had phone calls, emails, and letters, I think, to the district, vacant lot owners. And I'm a little... I know what your concerns are, and I wish I had all the answers for you. Back in June, you were sent a letter by the district, Condition 82. This letter complies with Condition 82 for the wastewater project. In the letter, it is quite ambiguous because it tells you that in order to comply with Condition 82, we must send you this letter that then tells you you can't develop unless you comply with Conditions 34 and 36, without really telling you what Conditions 34 and 76 are. Condition 34 is a comprehensive groundwater management plan. It's all coming to light that we have seawater intrusion, we have a limited water supply. So it's very unfortunate, but it appears that vacant lot owners in Los Osos will be strapped with the same types of restrictions as our neighbors to the north in Cambria are as far as developing out their lots due to shortage in water. Condition 76 is a habitat conservation plan for the entire community of Los Osos. Habitat conservation, many of you know that we live in a special environment where the plants and animals are unique to Los Osos, and we are bound by law to take care of them, and we are developing a plan in order to mitigate the damage that is done by further development in Los Osos. What's not spelled out is that both Condition 34 and 76 will then one day have to be included in what's called the Estero Area Plan. And that is our general plan, our general planning document for all of our zoning, all of our wishes and desires for the future development of our community and our county. This is a long way off. And I hate the board wants to do what they can in order to comply with these rules. And we want to build a project that would do a better job at maybe recharging our basin so that we would have more water for development. We want to conserve water so that there is water for the people that live here currently. And I think we need a chance. But again, I'm very, very sorry for those of you who are confused by the process, and I'm very, very, very sorry for vacant lot owners who have been under the impression that this is all just going to go away as soon as the sewer is built. It's simply not going to happen that way. So that's it for tonight.
Vice President, do you have any additional comments at this time? Director Stasenia?
Following up Julie's comments, I'd just like to remind everybody about the very important LOCAC meeting here, 7:30 tomorrow night, to talk about water supply, groundwater management. 7 o'clock. That is probably going to be every bit as contentious as the location of a sewer plant.
Director Sasania.
Regarding...
Senate, excuse me.
Yes, thanks. Regarding the Habitat Conservation Plan, I've had a very strong sentiment that this is a very strong countywide issue, and not particularly to the sewer project. And I'd like to encourage the county to contribute more toward this plan in developing and financing, because it truly is a part of the planning process, the land management development scheme. And, you know, the CSD doesn't need to be in the land planning service. And we provide facilities for people, but certainly we don't determine where and when they build their homes, and we shouldn't. This should be a county function. And... I'd like to encourage them to participate to a greater degree.
Thank you. Just a few comments from me, briefly. Community, please be patient with us. Please stay tuned. We have lots of things planned for getting information out to you, both on the public channel, through a mini bear pride, through changing the website, and through reaching you as many ways as we can. Please be patient. Again, we've been in 11 days with this new board, and we're working as fast as we can, but all of these are on the plate to take care of. And so if you're calling or writing me, I apologize if I'm not getting back to you right away. I'm trying, but work full time and all that. And I'm getting a lot of calls and emails, and I'm trying. And I'm sure the other directors are having similar situations. So please be patient with us. We're working as hard as we can as kind of citizen volunteers too. And the other thing I wanted to say was... about the meetings coming up. I know we've had some requests for getting some details on that. Right now, I can tell you about the next three meetings for sure. And I have something for the table that you can look at that's proposed for the next 3 months till Christmas time. Very hard to, and she hasn't confirmed all the locations yet. So to be announced, but at least it'll give you an idea of when we're planning to meet. Another thing we're doing is we're setting some adjourned board meetings. That means under the Brown Act, we cannot be in the same meeting together unless we schedule an adjourned board meeting. And I need to ask Mr. McClendon, does that need to be an action? Do I need to make a motion, or can I just set it?
It depends if you're wanting to adjourn this meeting to another meeting. I think it's generally appropriate to adjourn a meeting at that meeting at that time. So I think you can do that when that meeting occurs.
Okay, so there are a couple of those I'd like to announce as well. We'd like to have an adjourned board meeting so we can all attend LOCAC tomorrow night on October 12th. Oh, Mr. Blesky?
Because of the reporting and the publishing, we've published that as a special meeting because of the notice requirements.
Right. Pardon me, could you say that again?
We had to post it today because otherwise we would not have had the 24-hour posting requirement, so it was posted as a special board meeting.
Okay, so tomorrow...
That works.
That works too? Okay, so tomorrow, because we're going to the LOCAC Water Workshop, it's going to be called a special meeting for us to comply with the Brown Act. Another adjourned board meeting that we're going to have is Thursday, October 27th with the LOCAC. That's going to be another one. And another one we're going to have is Friday, November 4th, where there's a water funding fair that some of us are going to want to go to. And so this will all be announced as we go. And just wanted to let you know that's the current schedule for right now. So that's our director and staff comments, agenda and scheduling. And now I'm going to read the closed session items, and you are welcome to make public comment on the closed session items. And then we'll go into closed session and come out and report in about an hour. And that's going to be the end of our meeting. So here I go. This is the announcement of closed session items, public comments on closed session items, and convening of closed session. Pending litigation. Conference with district counsel. Re pending litigation pursuant to Government Code 54956.9A, 5 cases. LOCSD versus San Luis Obispo County Clerk, case and et al. Recase initiative petition in Slo Superior Court, CV050562. Los Osos Taxpayers Association, the LOCSD and State Water Board in Slo Superior Court, CV050649. Proposition 218. LOCSD versus South California Water Company et al. In Slo Superior Court, CV040126. CCLO versus LOCSD et al. In Slo Superior Court, CV050763. CEQA. And case/CCLO versus State Water Board and LOCSD in Sacramento Superior Court, CV050801231. That's about the SRF loan and Prop 218. Also, anticipated litigation. Conference with District Legal Counsel, significant exposure to anticipated litigation pursuant to Government Code 54956.9B, 2 cases. So that's the summary of the closed session items, and now we'll
take them that needs to be brought before the public. We can work out it, put it on a public PowerPoint slide, or if there's any special information that we need to put on, we'll accommodate the board at that time.
Is that appropriate? Thank you very much. Mr. Sparks.
Joe Sparks, Los Osos, President Schicker and the board. It's interesting, Director Sennett, you mentioned that you're not in the business of land planning. Measure B seems to be a land use decision to me. So I would hope you would confer with the county on Measure B being actually considered a land use decision. As well, from the October 6th letter from the Regional Water Quality Board, there's the statement that I go to the 4th paragraph. However, such recommendation would be contingent. This is a recommendation to apply the assessed amount of the fines to the project cost. And however, such recommendation would be contingent upon the CSD taking all necessary actions to support completion of this wastewater project, including but not limited to continuing to defend against appeal of the recent Superior Court ruling invalidating the facility location initiative, that is, continue to support the Superior Court's ruling in favor of the project under construction. So I'm urging this board to facilitate to whatever degree you can the ruling on the legality of Measure B. I don't think Measure B is going to help you when you go to the Water Board. The provisions of Measure B provide no assurance that you can have a wastewater treatment facility. And it doesn't bode well for you going before the Water Board in December with Measure B. So I hope you consider that. And again, I referred to on October 1st the opinion of the court in the case in Sacramento, where he stated in the text that he did not believe it was retroactively applicable to the pending project. As well, I would encourage you to talk to your district legal counsel. You know, presently, I think everybody might remember Proposition 187. Remember that? It was passed by the state. It's never been enforced. It went to federal court. The Attorney General of California is not defending it. He's not even bothering to defend it. So I think legal counsel and you need to take these things under consideration, because Measure B, as I've stated before the election and after, is, I think, a problem for this district in a lot of ways, and I think you need to take appropriate action to ensure that its legality is determined so that you are not impeded by it in providing for a needed wastewater treatment facility. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker, Mr. Bearden.
I see a lot of legal numbers and stuff in this thing, and I don't have the faintest idea what each one of those things meant. It would be nice if you had something in there that gave an English description of what each one was. And then when you come out of closed session, you could maybe tell us the results or whatever have you. Thank you.
Mr. Perlman.
Hello, I'm Perlman, Prohibition Zone. I just want to take Dick Sargent's analogy of playing chicken with a freight train and say that the previous board did drive their lemon Cadillac.
I just wanted to thank you all. I think you've taken on an incredibly heavy load, and I think you're doing a great job. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Anybody else would like to speak tonight?
I second that, but at the same time, I think do things in a businesslike way and things will work just fine. And you do that. I wanted to make a comment on Measure B, since I was one of the people who was a proponent of Measure B. And I talked to Julie Biggs, who's helped us build that, Burke Williams and Sorensen. She made it very clear that you have a duty and an obligation to defend all the ordinances of the Community Services District. And I think when you were sworn in, you swore to obey the Constitution of the state and the federal government and support the rules of the district. Well, this is now, along with a water ordinance, a wastewater ordinance, and you're bound to support it and defend it. And John, as the district's legal counsel, correct me if I'm wrong, but you are bound to defend Measure B. May I have an answer to that question? Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. McClendon.
At this point, I would agree with you on that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else would like any public comment on the closed session items? Is there anybody left who wants to speak? Okay, I'm calling it. 1, 2, 3, gone. Okay, we'll be back in an hour if you're here, and if not, we'll report at the next meeting. Thank you for your attendance.